tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 24th, 1996.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, as the case may be across all these many time zones stretching all the way from the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands in the west, the West Virgin Islands. Good morning, St. Thomas, in the east, down south into South America, north to the pole, and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. Top of the morning to you. All right, it's going to be open lines tonight. No guests. We'll have Richard Hoagland here Friday night, Saturday morning. You don't want to miss that one. The big news is they've got the flight recorders. It was about a little over 2 hours ago, they reported the recovery of the flight data and voice recorders to Flight 800. Nobody has yet said whether they were pinging or whether they just physically found them. I don't know the story there yet. Five more bodies have been found, 113 thus far, 93 positively identified. The president will visit very, very angry relatives who held a news conference earlier in the day carried by CNN. The White House has issued an order saying whatever information the NTSB gathers should be given first to the families. New York Governor Pataki probably didn't help the situation when he said, and this is typical of the way the information dispersal on this has been going, said the word from divers was that, quote, dozens and dozens of bodies have been recovered. Then the investigators themselves said, no, not true, not recovered, but seen. The investigators said, no, it's not true. They had not located dozens and dozens of bodies. Then later, the investigators came back and said, yes, it is true that many bodies have been seen tangled with the wreckage at the bottom of the ocean. The FBI has been, this is really interesting, has been dispatched to re-interview witnesses, National Guard witnesses, using, in some cases, hypnosis to help them recall what they saw. Now, some people have been running around saying, well, we shot down our own plane. Well, as a matter of fact, the exercise that was going on was not an armed one. Was not armed. Not live fire. So the airplanes could not have shot down Flight 800. They didn't have any ammunition. None. Remember now, there were 100 witnesses who saw a streak of light headed up to this airplane before the explosion, including two military pilots who, without equivocation, said, yes, it was a missile. Now, with the recovery of the flight data recorders, maybe we will learn something. I believe the, now I'm not an aeronautical expert, but the flight data recorder generally will yield the information the instruments had right up until the moment of destruction. That may give them a clue. The cockpit voice recorder will yield any information said inside the cockpit, but not necessarily radioed to the ground. So the answer may be close. Or maybe not. Maybe there will simply be a stoppage with a, you know, whatever, the explosion occurring like that, boom. Maybe there will be some sort of word from the pilots about, oh my God, look at that. Look what's headed toward us or something. Who knows? So the mystery of Flight 800 is a little closer to being answered tonight. A little closer. And the speculation about all of this, of course, continues unabated. Interesting story. Moving through a little other news, Army investigators at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, are looking into whether a black soldier may have been responsible for getting this, painting swastikas on the doors to black soldiers' rooms this month. There have been no arrests, as far as I know, according to a spokesman, but I understand the investigation is pointing toward an African-American. Swastikas? Strange, huh? So, there you've got it. Bosnia is likely to return to war if no international force stays after December. Well, what a surprise. When NATO peacekeepers plan to leave, and we are going to leave then, according to the administration, and they've been getting asked about that regularly on Sunday shows. Yes, we'll be out, they say, but now the prediction is the Bosnian war will simply resume when we leave. So, what have we done? Given them a breather, at least, I guess. Dear Art, now, at the end of the program yesterday, some lady called up and said, Art, they have recovered a B-52 from World War II in Oregon. And I said to the lady at the time, I don't think so. You know, B-52s were not active during World War II. It was the 50s when they were put into service, and indeed, it was not a B-52. It was a B-24 Liberator, about a third the size of a B-52. So I got about a million faxes. There was no time to get that answered yesterday before we got off the air. And my fax machine went nuts. My email went nuts all day long with people answering that for me. I knew it could not have been, and said so last night, a B-52. Indeed, it was not. It was a B-24 Liberator, and it was indeed found. One of the latest crop circles that we've been hearing about, in all places, up in Nebraska, I've got an article here from a Nebraska newspaper. It says, crop circle, probably not prank, according to the experts. Two national authorities said Tuesday that a mysterious circular pattern found in a barley field near Butte, Nebraska, could be a naturally occurring phenomenon. Both W.C. Levengood, a retired university professor from Grass Lake, Michigan, and John Kasher, a physics professor at the University of Nebraska at Omaha, said circle did not appear to be the work of pranksters. Two researchers from Omaha plan to visit that site today to analyze the curious 30-foot circle surrounded by a 4-foot ring. And again, we encounter crop circles. And again, it is not a prank, according to the experts. So what is it? A message? A message to man? Some sort of atmospheric phenomenon? Nobody knows. But it sure as hell isn't Doug and Dave. A little bit of politics. Bob Dole, in Pennsylvania, trying to woo women voters. And boy, does he need to do that. Susan Molinari is going to do his keynote address. And today, she said, Bob Dole, of all people, does not deserve a gender gap. Doesn't deserve it. Deserved or not, he has got a magungus gender gap. Women don't like Bob Dole. Why? Abortion? Well, that's a partial answer, but there's a lot more at work here than just that. But then again, there's a lot of men who are not altogether wild about Bob Dole either. Dear Art, I just had to fax you after hearing a report on ABC Radio News. Now brace yourself, folks. The Clinton administration is now thinking, this is from Jeremy in Bakersfield, is now thinking of levying a sin tax on unmarried couples who live together. I don't think there has been a single issue in the past that has made me so angry. Art, I'm 23. I've got a 6-year-old son, yes. My fiance and I are too young to have a child now, but we're already across the bridge, and we can't go back. I've got a pretty good job as a night supervisor at this 24-hour copy shop and make a decent living. Now, maybe some of the rest of you can help me out with this, but I had not heard the Clinton administration plans to levy a tax, really, on unmarried couples who live together? No kidding. It's very interesting, and I would like confirmation of that, and I haven't heard it anywhere else. That is strange, isn't it? Two more quick questions, and I think we'll do open lines. Art Bell, I have a topic suggestion for your show. How about the strangest ways to die? Not very long ago, a fisherman in some foreign country died because he had a fish jump down into his throat while he was fishing during a long yawn. In other words, he went, oh, 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 and a fish jumped down his throat. He was asphyxiated, died after his comrades tried to save him, presumably trying to grab the tail of the fish, I guess, and pull it out, assuming it went in head first. I've also heard of an armored car guard killed because a ton of quarters fell upon him, crushing the life force from the system that drove the blood through his veins. One other strange death. A sanitation worker fell into the pit of dung and drowned. Oh, that'd be an awful way to go. He used another word here, not dung, but you get the idea. That's from Ron in Calabasas Hills, California. Those are strange ways to die, indeed. I particularly don't like the fish. Can you imagine taking a big yawn and having a fish leap out of the water and jump down your throat? Yuck. And then one other person emailed me and said, Art, ask your audience, and this might be a very interesting question. If you had the opportunity to ask the deity of your belief one question, or another way to put it, and I don't mind putting it this way, if you had an opportunity to ask God one question, what would it be? One question guaranteed to be answered, you know, I hesitate to use the word truthfully, because you know God isn't going to lie to you, right? But if you had an opportunity to ask God one question, what, pray tell, would that question be? In a moment, open lines. I cannot yet give you the call letters, but I can tell you that beginning this coming Monday, we go on the air in Washington, D.C. Cool, huh? This coming Monday, we go on the air in Washington, D.C. I have been authorized to tell you that much. And we will be on the air in Washington, D.C., get this, East Coast time, from 2 in the morning until 7 in the morning. 7 in the morning. Now, this is a good-sized station. It covers all of D.C. like a blanket, and the majority of the state of Virginia as well. So I'm looking forward to that. Now, they can already hear us in Washington, D.C. through the auspices of some other affiliates, but this one is going to be right there. And we're going to be on the air till 7 o'clock in the morning. So that means that we're going to be able to talk to the people in D.C. As a matter of fact, we're going to be able to talk to them as they roll their way to work in the Beltway traffic jams. So I'm looking forward to that, as you might imagine. That's going to be fun. And that all begins Monday. Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. That should be pretty cool. As the program continues to expand and expand and expand incredibly. So, once again, if you had an opportunity to ask God or Ross Mitchell one question, what would it be? East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yes. I want to say something about that tax on unmarried couples.
But yes. First, are you aware of that story also?
No, I hadn't heard it. That's the first I've heard of it. I kind of find it a little hard to believe.
I do, too.
But the question I would ask God, if he were guaranteed to give me an answer...
Yes. Oh, he would be. I mean, you know God would never lie to you.
Well, he could say, no, I don't want to answer. I mean...
No. The presumption of the question here, sir, is that he would answer you no matter what you asked.
Okay. My question then would be, would you allow me to live for the length of time it would take you to tell me everything that has happened and everything that will happen in the universe?
No.
Oh, I thought he had to answer that.
Yeah, you got your answer.
Oh, okay.
The answer was no. Now, I said the answer would be, I can't presume to, answer for God, of course, but I would presume that would be the answer. We are mortal. And so you could ask, but I think the answer would be a resounding mm-mm.
Even if you ask him, what day is it?
This is knowledge. This is knowledge that will come to you when you come to me. How about that?
Yes. As far as that tax, how are they going to tell? For instance, a friend of mine recently got a female, just platonic relationship roommate. How are they going to tell whether they're a couple?
Cameras.
And in that case, what if it's, a gay couple? Are they going to give them a special exemption since they're not married and they can't force them?
Well, I suppose if it is a syntax, then one might presume it would be more in that case. But again, there would have to be cameras. Because you might claim that it was platonic. They would have to know, right?
That's why I don't really think that that's actually a tax they're proposing.
We would have to have the ISS. The Internal Sexual Service. The whole thing's nuts. I appreciate the call, sir. Look, I don't know. I say again, and I will read it again, but this is, according to this faxer, Jeremy in Bakersfield, ABC did report, this is Jeremy now, saying that ABC reported, the Clinton administration is thinking of levying a syntax on unmarried couples who live together. Now, I too find it a little hard to believe. They would call it a syntax? Really? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. I'm calling from Peoria, Illinois.
Yes, sir. WTAZ country.
Yeah, you betcha. Boy, I tell you, I wanted to get through to you so bad last night, I thought I was going to explode when that lady called you about this... build more schools and and I would venture to say, if she's out there somewhere listening tonight, there's two items I wanted to talk about. The first one is, I'd venture to say that if there were enough people like her, what she doesn't seem to realize is, if you stop the defense program and start building schools, the other nations are going to look at us like a hungry lion.
I know. I would not have. And I wouldn't now mind if she called and expressed that opinion. I might take issue with her, and that everything would be fine. The problem I had with her was that she was saying that because I wanted a defense shield, I was a warmonger, and she was putting words in my mouth, and that drove me up a tree.
Boy, I could smell the hate, too. just the blood boiling inside of
me. Sort of wafting out of your radio speaker grill, huh?
And there was another thing.
All right, the other thing we'll have to hold until after the break,
sure.
as will you. Stay right there.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. To Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 24th of July, 1996.
Open lines all night long tonight, and I've got a couple of items for you here in a moment. Right now, back to my caller. You're back on the air, sir.
Well, hi. One thing I wanted to, there are two little quick things here. One was on our television, our ABC affiliate here,
yes.
A couple days ago, they asked a question on a talkback type thing.
Right.
Would you pay more money to fly in an airplane if the security, if the security was tighter, would you pay more money? And I sat down and I thought to myself, I just flew out to Los Angeles not long ago,
yes.
And on a 757, there's close to 300 people on the plane. And each of them, I would say, on average, I paid a lot more than that because I bought my ticket at the last minute.
Isn't that really almost a dumb question? I mean, what would the alternative be? No, no, actually, I'd rather have less security and pay less. I don't care if there's a bomb on my plane. I mean,
well, you know, how much money do they need to make?
Which person? Yeah, but which person is going to answer that way? Would you pay more so that a bomb won't go off on your plane?
Ooh, well,
plenty of people said, yeah, they would. It was
They did. Of course they did.
But it was like $60,000 they make on one flight full of people if they average $200 a ticket. I mean, how much money do they need to make sure that people are that security is up to what it should be? And the other thing was, did you see the Dateline thing about Roswell just about maybe a week or two ago?
No, I did not. What did they say about Roswell?
Well, they turned it into a complete farce, and they made Roswell look like an opportunistic little town that made up a fake UFO crash so they could get revenue because they were starving to death down there.
Oh, Dateline.
It is true. Shred of evidence that
Wait a minute. It is true that Roswell has a couple of museums, but so what? The museums did not predate the crash.
Well, and they never talked to one of the bona fide people who had anything really to do with it. Just a couple of farmers that said, well, you know, I think I know what happened. And they said there's no witnesses, there's no evidence that anything actually happened. And we did talk to the government, and the government's last word was that it wasn't a weather balloon, but it was some sort of other testing device.
It was called a balloon train. It wasn't a balloon. It was a different kind of balloon. That's what they're saying. All right, sir. I've got to wander along here. Thank you.
Thanks.
I mean, that's it. Fine. Take after Roswell, you little twits. Come on, NBC. You know better than that. So what if they've got a museum there? So what if they're capitalizing on it? So what? What's the sin in that? Is that a way of debunking the original story? I think not. It's a cheap, easy shot kind of way to do it, I suppose. But then again, NBC's reporting has always been totally spotless, hasn't it? On our international line, you are upon the air. Good morning. Where are you, please?
Well, it's good day, good afternoon, 2:38 Thursday afternoon, Australia, Artichoke.
Oh, Stan Deo. Stan,
how are
the man.
You?
I'm just fine. How are you, Stan?
Well, I'm frustrated trying to get your thing over the internet here on my computer, your program, and it keeps dropping out for some reason on WOAI.
Oh.
And so I only hear a sporadic little burst of it, and it's gone. What are you talking about tonight?
All kinds of things. You know, Flight 800, of course, is big news back here, and they just recovered the black boxes, so that's big news. We're talking about all kinds of things, Stan. What's on your mind? What's going on down there?
Well, somebody emailed me and said you were talking, I guess, earlier this week or late last week about Atlantis and stuff again. Is that right?
Well, to some degree, that is correct. As you know or may not know, we had Graham Hancock on a couple of times. And I've got Richard Hoagland coming back on this Friday night, Saturday morning.
Is he going to be speaking on that or on the lunar things?
Well, he's going to speak on a number of things, one of them relating to a moon of Jupiter. There's some big news going on there.
Because it changed a lot on the terrain between the missions. Is that the one?
They may have. I can't talk about it, Stan, on the air.
Right. Okay.
Glad to tell you privately. I'm trying to hold it as a surprise for the audience, and it is going to be a surprise. What do you know about Atlantis?
Well, I've kind of renewed my interest in it. My second book, I had a whole couple of chapters on Atlantis and where it would be today, where it is today. from information we got out of the oil exploration files and microfilm from over in Saudi Arabia. And I just got an email here last week from some guy over in Dubai that I think he listens to your program somehow or another. I don't know how, but he was telling me that you'd been talking about that, and he knew I'd written about it, and it was somewhere near Saudi Arabia, the Persian Gulf, that I had stated. And so we've entered into a discourse to try to figure out how to spur some of the Saudi rich houses or the Bahrainis to let a group come back in and show them where their national treasure is, all of Atlantis there, the whole Saudi peninsula.
That would certainly be a national treasure, all right. Although I imagine, were it to suddenly rise, Stan, there'd probably be a war over people trying to plant flags on it.
Well, this is the problem we've got. Certainly, there is a sunken portion of it. The capital, I'm reasonably certain, is at Abu Ali, next to the Berri oil fields, just south of Kuwait. But the problem is, in the water it's in there in the Persian Gulf, is it's in Saudi off-coast and partially in Kuwait off-coast, and the Bahrainis would be upset if anybody was taking it out there, even though it's not on their immediate coastline.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, there would be people trying to plant flags on that particular spot.
You bet.
But the real archaeological treasure and technical treasure, I think, is all in the empty quarter, the Ru'ab Khali of southern Saudi Arabia, which is all desert and petrified forests and ancient stone buildings and mine shafts and that kind of stuff. That's where it is, and there's heaps of treasure there just digging, you know, in the sand.
Do you want to go over and dig a bit?
Oh, hey. I was talking to Cousteau's people on board the Alcyon with Captain Durasov in 1989 about going in, and you know, we had the problem with the Gulf War come up, and nobody could take a ship in the area without fear of a bubble mine breaking in half.
So. Well, that's right. Yes, I recall. So, but now things, well, I won't say they're calm, but they're calmer. So is there a real chance you might get over there?
Well, we're certainly trying to push it that way. If we do it with Cousteau's people, they reckon it'll take $3 million a week to support the diving crew and take them back to Europe, you know, on a five-day rotation.
Wow.
We'd have to dredge some areas to do that. The underwater one's very expensive. But failing that, if we can just get, you know, the official ruling bodies of at least Saudi Arabia to say, yeah, look, we'll give you, a King's X to come in here and talk about these things, even though they're kind of threatening our religion or whatever, and come on in and we'll carry you around. We did get close a couple years back to getting the ruling family there to sponsor us in, but it kind of fell in the heat for some reason, and we haven't renewed it until this year, so we're trying.
All right. Well, keep us updated on that. And, Stan, what do you note thermally? Where are the hot spots? Stan looks at naval satellite imagery. Thermal imagery of the ocean and the earth, and with it predicts earthquakes. So what's going on?
Well, it's kind of hard to say at the moment. The data I've been getting has had a lot of cloud cover because of storms, and so it's rather patchy. But what I can see for North America, which I'm sure you're interested in,
yes,
is that there are a number of thermal increases north and west of the Great Lakes up near Canada, which are huge thermal increases.
Really?
And one that seems to just keep going and keep going down in the Baja Bay area. I don't know what is causing that, but certainly the changes are reaching out from there west to Hawaii. And as you are aware, I'm sure, Hawaii has had 1,500 earthquakes in the last week south of the main island.
I am aware. Yes. Does that would be volcanic related stuff, wouldn't it?
That's correct. There's a subsea volcano that's I think it's about 3,000 feet. The top of 3,000 feet under, or something like that, under the ocean surface, is apparently about to build again. It may just be a magma flow, or it could be a disruptive explosion. But certainly, my spotters who live on the island and near Kilauea, the Kilauea vent, are keeping a close eye because it's going to rock their boat if it's anything bigger.
Stan, I've got an idea. What are you in the middle of right now?
Oh. Having a cup of coffee? Why?
Well, why don't you sit there and we'll let some callers ask you questions. You want to do that?
Why not? Let's do it.
All right, fine. So that's Stan Deo in in Perth, Australia. And Stan knows a lot about advanced aviation, things that fly at Mach speeds that we only dream about.
and thermal imaging and Atlantis, and Stan's a lot of fun. So if you have a question for Stan about Australia, anything you've ever wanted to know about Australia, here's your guy. Or aviation, or earthquakes, or Atlantis, here's your guy. So I think I'll hold Stan for a little bit here. Why not? And let you ask questions. So if you have any questions for Stan Dale, come now. Again, we're going to hold Stan Dale here for a while, I think, and pummel him with questions. So let me bring Stan up here over here on the guest line. Are you there, Stan?
I am indeed.
Okay. I do have one thing I want to bring up with you. Stan, I know that you can occasionally get to my webpage, correct?
Yes.
We have posted photographs of the Stonehenge crop circle and the so-called double helix crop circle on my webpage. They are absolutely astounding. Have you seen them yet?
Yeah, didn't you get my email?
No.
Oh, look, you know how those circles, I've got it. I've taken it down and had a look at the photo. You know those spirally things down at the bottom, those perfect circles?
Yes.
Something just clicked. My son and I were sitting here looking at it, and he says...
And last Sunday...
I'll pull it down and have a listen.
All right, good. It's in the first half hour of Dreamland last Sunday.
As I told you before, I really think that what you've got there is real parts from something at Roswell, because in 62, I think it was, or 61, whenever I was talking to that young fella in Dallas, his dad recovered something that had layers or pieces to it. Till I saw that in your report, till that last piece came in with a layered surface,
yes.
I wasn't sure, but, boy, I'm convinced.
Okay. All right, Stan, let's see what lays out there for you. It's been a long time since you've talked to the audience. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Dale in Perth, Australia. Hello.
Yo, hi, this is Phil in Downey, California.
Hi, Phil.
The reason I called is I haven't been listening. I have the radio off. I just wanted to say maybe it was 52 years since that B-24 went down in the Atlantic, since World War II ended in 45.
All right, yeah, we already got that. Thank you very much. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Dale in Perth, Australia. Hello.
Hello. I have a question here. It's a little bit off that subject. Is that okay?
Anything. Go ahead.
Anything. Okay. First off, I'd like to say hi to all my friends out in Pound 2600, and this is Craig from Minneapolis.
Okay.
And I have a little bit of a quickening deal for you. Recently, there was what looks like a 5-year-old girl that was shot up at an Amoco station at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Recently, a couple days ago, thought that fell into that category, and I had a question for you about remote viewing and where could one learn to do this.
All right, well, we've had several people on, and we'll be repeating the Courtney Brown. Have you been keeping up on this... remote viewing business, Stan?
Well, the odd report. I mean, are you talking about the stuff the CIA rejected because it was only two-thirds successful?
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, I was indirectly associated with some of those programs years ago myself.
Oh, you were?
And we were kind of like brainwashed, is what it amounts to. But the program did have failures, and a number of the people, according to my trainers, said that they said that certain of the people died because of the way they rearrange your mind. You can almost tune your thoughts like a radio by getting into a I forget what it's called, an alpha state or what. But anyway, just before you wake up in the morning, when you're just semi-conscious, you can project out and start to eavesdrop. But what they showed or what they did to us never enabled me to know who I was eavesdropping on. I was just able to draw the information or the data from various research.
So I had no idea that you had done remote viewing.
Oh, well, I have written about it. We just didn't call it remote viewing. I think we call it tapping into a global database or something. I even recounted the story in the Cosmic Conspiracy book I wrote in the interviews with the director of the Aeronautical Research Labs in Melbourne, Australia.
I'll be darned.
They were telling me about it.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Stan Dale in Perth, Australia. Good morning.
Hi, Stan. Are you familiar with the Aborigines, Indians down there?
The Aboriginals? Oh, yes.
I'm reading a book here on the mutants. This lady spent a year with, or 4 months with them, and all kinds of interesting things happened. And there was even a thing going on where the Australian government was trying to poo-poo her findings about them. They're trying to bury them or whatever. Were you aware of the politics of that?
What's the name of the book?
I'll find it here. By Marlowe. Oh, sorry, I don't have it right in front of me. But she spent 4 months with her. Went back in the desert with them and learned their ways. And the most hilarious part of it was that they actually use are capable of using mental telepathy, and even a form of remote viewing. But whenever they were taken to the city and they saw someone talking on a payphone, one of them said, you modern people are not too modern if you have to put a piece of metal in a box to talk to someone you can't see.
Well, look, we have heard that. Certainly the Aborigines have the tribals in the center do have an ability to communicate over vast distances with their own kind. Really? They know when things happen. They can tell you.
Really?
Oh yeah, it's quite spooky. I have a friend actually just down the street here who did his PhD on a lot of the tribal mechanisms, and he's lived with them and walked with them for 3 years. They do some incredible things, but they have science or pharmacy that is absolutely astounding. I remember one time he was telling me about going off with them up to the northwest, up into the toward the equator, on the top side of Australia, near Queensland, and they were walking along, and they were about a day and a half walk from the coast, from the sea, and they were going up there to eat some sea worms, which are quite tart and several feet long, and they're gelatinous, kind of a treat.
Yummy.
But a day and a half from getting there, the Abos stopped with him in this clay pit, and they started getting kaolin-type clay and shoving it into their kit bag and saying to him, take clay with you. So they packed it in, and a day and a half later, they're out there eating the worms. Well, before they eat the worms, they would eat some of this clay.
Yeah.
And he says, you know what? If you don't eat this clay, it's dolomite, calcium, magnesium oxide. If you don't eat it, you get the most incredible case of runs from eating these worms. But they knew that they had to eat this stuff to stop the runs before they ate these worms.
Oh.
And they've got all kinds of pharmacy they use that just astounds us.
All right, listen, Stan, we're up here at the top of the hour, so I'm going to put you on hold. You can go relax for about 8 minutes or something, and we'll come back and do another hour. Stan Dale, surprise, from Perth, Australia. By the way, with respect to the question that I had asked earlier, if you could ask God one question, I've got a response from Whittier, California. From Veda. Veda in Whittier says, Dear Art, if I had a chance to ask God one question, I'd ask why he made celery low-calorie and hot fudge sundaes high-calorie. Seems it would have been just as easy to reverse them. She makes a good point, and it would have made life so much easier for those of us on Earth. But then again, maybe God in his wisdom decided that why should it be easy for them? They had it that way in the garden, and now they're out. So we'll reverse it. Maybe it was that way in the garden. We'll be back.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 24th, 1996.
It certainly is. Surprise guest Stan Dale from Perth, Australia on our international line, and I thought I would let you ask him some questions. Stan has a fascinating background. Big announcement. Beginning Monday, we go on the air in Washington, D.C. I wonder what they're going to think of all this back in D.C. Anyway, back to Stan Dale, and if you have questions for him about Australia, or about his work, and he's done some pretty strange stuff, including remote viewing. Then we will we'll get to them in a moment. Back now, all the way to Perth, Australia. Stan, is Perth a cool place to live?
Weather-wise, it's usually very warm. You've caught us in the cool part of our year, the winter.
Oh, that's right. It's winter time. I keep forgetting it's winter down there.
Well, we can't have winter. It's very mild over in our part of the country. Over on the east coast of Australia, it's a lot more severe. We have ski slopes and things like that and lodges over in the mountains. But over here, we're down at the sea level at the Indian Ocean, and we have a lot of beaches and lovely ladies and bikinis and things like that. And
sounds rough.
It's a single man's paradise.
All right. Here is a fax. Art, please tell Stan that I was one of those people who turned on your show and heard the incredibly fantastic story that Stan was telling about his days in the Air Force Academy, unconventional black aircraft based on UFO technology. Would you be willing to say any more about that or repeat a little bit of it?
Well, I suppose so. I must correct the caller here that the black technology as such was not... in the aircraft was not at the Air Force Academy. That was being done over west in the United States and down at the South Pole, as far as I was instructed. When I left the Academy, I went down to Dallas, got into business and computing down there with some of the IBM customers. And in the process, I was doing private research at home in my own lab on anti-gravity and propulsion and this kind of stuff. Making some rather remarkable strides with the things that I just kind of dreamed up in the morning, the early hours of the day. I couldn't figure out where the equations and drawings were coming from, but I'd get up and write them down. And somewhere along that time, in 1971, I think it was, I was approached by a second for Dr. James R. Maxfield, who has the radiation research clinic in Dallas, in Oak Lawn, I think it is.
Yes.
And he used to work with Dr. Teller openly at the Lawrence Livermore Radiation Labs. Now, I was sent to Dr. Maxfield, and just one-on-one, I went into his office, and he explained a lot of things to me about what they had done, he and Maxfield and the various other projects they had sponsored or overseen, to build flying saucer-type craft since the mid-50s. I emphasize that this does not explain away UFOs, flying saucers, etc. before that time. This is only at that time that they were talking about making our own to copy something that other people had seen.
Right.
Now, there are two kinds of flying saucers, if you wish, as far as I know, man-made ones anyway, and that is a plasma craft, which is a saucer-shaped craft, which has a hole in the middle of it going through it, and it allows the air to be accelerated and charged and heated so that it squirts out in front of the aircraft on the top of it and bends around to form like a donut or smoke ring type encasing flow of air around and through the craft to give it kind of a breaststroke through the environment. That was the kind that I had started designing when they got me and brought me in. They had already had some 52, I think it was, projects by that time that had done it a number of other ways. And eventually I was shown photographs, color Polaroid photographs, of an assembly area where the new electromagnetic or electrogravitic craft were being assembled. And I could see how they wound the huge flat bar, flat wire coil that was the main drive coil, like a Pharaoh's hat around the primary cockpit for where the crew was.
Right.
And there's a lot of things I've learned since then that I've either dug out or it's been handed to me by the folks. We do have them. It's no guess or a figment. We do have these craft.
Stan, can you tell me what speeds they're capable of?
Well, the fastest ones are capable of incredible, apparently instantaneous accelerations from stop to say, 100,000 feet in 11 seconds. That would be like going 20 miles in 11 seconds from dead stop.
Wow.
I have friends who have clocked them in their F-A-18s down here. I have pilots that feed me information from their data on board. And it's rather spooky. I mean, you think you're in an F-18 that you're, you know, pretty much kingpin in your airspace, but you lock onto one of these babies and say, hey, there it is, let's go get it, and your wingman, and you go zeroing in on it with your FLIR pods on it. And as soon as your targeting computer locks onto it, the thing just goes straight up, not sideways, straight up, 100,000 feet in 11 seconds. Well, that's fairly impressive. When you pack your bags and go home.
That's right. All right, let's go back to the lines. First time caller line, you're on the air with Stan Deo in Perth, Australia. Hello.
Yeah.
Where are you, sir?
This is Jason from Cape Girardeau, Missouri.
All right, you've got a question?
Yeah, I had a question for both you and Stan, but I'll do Stan's first. Stan?
Yes, Jason.
Let's see. Over here where I'm living at, we're sitting basically on the New Madrid Fault.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and I was just wondering, what do you see on your thermal deal that you was talking about earlier about how much pressure is building up here?
Well, unfortunately, all I can see is in the water temperature changes around the coast of any country. I do feel, from what I've seen west and north of the Great Lakes in the water up there in offshore of Canada, that and from what I've seen down around Florida and Texas, Louisiana, that area in the southern part of New Madrid, that there is a lot of thermal change present there. It is growing.
Yep.
And at this point, I can't tell you more than that. I mean, I've seen worse. But there are earthquakes occurring up that area now and some over in Washington. So I would say that whole area may be active.
All right, so hold on to your hat is the answer. What's your other question?
Yeah, I was wanting to know about that Levitron.
Okay, well, the
gravity top.
All right,
how
well,
to get a hold of it?
The way to get a hold of it is to listen to Dreamland on Sunday. That is where we advertise it.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
Okay, take care. Let's see. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Stan Deo in Perth, Australia.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, Stan. My name is Mark.
Now, everybody has to understand there's a little bit of delay between here and Australia, so it's kind of like you've got to say what you want to say and then pause for a second. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Northern California near Santa Rosa, KSRO.
Okay, excellent. What is your question?
And the question is, when the Kaban Haikatake was coming overhead, I was looking at it, and the next day started picking up ESP signals of focular transmissions. And I want to ask Stan if he believes in the possibilities of transmitting with ESP to Alpha Centaurian realms that are coming from far beyond.
Wow. Stan?
Well, all I can say is that I firmly believe that we have the ability to transmit and receive telepathically. How far, I have no idea. I can't even control it in myself. It's only sporadically that I've ever had this thing happen. But so I do believe that it is possible. As far as the other cultures you're speaking of, I'm still undecided as to whether that is a hoax or by some other beings or whether it is real. Certainly there's something happening that is out of the human sphere. Whether it's our own governments, whether it is truly extraterrestrials or extra-dimensionals or whatever you want to call them, I don't know. I think they exist, but whether this particular group is, I don't know.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Deo in Perth, Australia. Where are you, please?
I'm in Houston, Texas.
Houston, yes, sir.
Yes, I was wondering, I got two questions to ask, one for you and one for
all right.
The guest. Okay, I was wondering, is the government using these space-like aircraft up in New Mexico due to the fact that there is a lot of reports up there?
Well, that's a good question, because the people that I was recruited by, even though they are in corporations and do have government clearances, seem to be acting independently of the civilian U.S. government and more in line with the Army or the Navy, with the military aspects of it. I'm not sure how much our politicians really know about what's going on. So when you say government, I will qualify that and say U.S. industry or industrial complexes and or military, yes, they probably have been doing something there in the region you speak of, Area 51, but I think the majority of it has been done safely down under the South Pole or at the South Pole for a number of years. It's just much less likelihood of detection while it was being developed.
I'm sure. All right, caller.
I also want to know what your web line is.
Oh, web address. All right, it's www.artbell.com. Very easy. Don't put a space between the art and the bell. That's A-R-T-B-E-L-L. So www.artbell.com. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Deo. Hi.
Hi, Art. A terrific show, as usual.
Thank you. Where are you?
I'm in Manitou Springs, Colorado. Stan should know where that is.
I do. I've been there.
Oh, yeah. It's a terrific place to go and have good food and good time by the Garden of the Gods.
I know. I remember it.
Oh, that's terrific. Stan, I have a question for you. I'm a student and in my sophomore year, and about remote viewing. First of all, is it possible for anybody to do? And in doing it, if it's possible, can you increase your IQ?
Well, as a guinea pig, I can only kind of talk at it from that perspective. But from what I heard from some of the other fellows that didn't make it, I would say that the technique they use to develop this in people does not work well on everyone. There may be better techniques for different people. So all I can say is that not every one of us, in fact, a high percentage of us, did not function well with the way they were trying to give us the remote viewing. Secondly, I don't know whether it increased my IQ or not. Certainly it increased my knowledge database. Because I could draw on so many things. It's like having a magic wand or a crystal ball to look at things and an encyclopedia that speaks to you in color. But, myself, I don't think I'm any brighter than I was when I was a young fellow. In fact, I'm probably getting a little bit dense.
Let me relate to you two things that were said by two remote viewers. I had Major Ed Dames on the program,
and
he had two incredibly worrisome things to say. I don't know if you heard that. Did you hear the program?
I heard parts of it. I pulled it down and listened to it.
All right. Well, the Major said when he was in the military doing remote viewing, they began to pick up the vision of babies dying, many babies dying. And this was related to some sort of virus that was going to come from mother's milk or some sort of virus, I believe he said, from mother's milk. The other thing that he said he saw in the next few years was tremendous winds, that the jet stream would literally, in his words, come down on deck and there would be winds of up to 300 miles an hour. Now, I also had on a man named Courtney Brown, who, in his own way, confirmed what Major Dame said with regard to the big winds and many people dying. He had a slightly different take on it. But have you heard of any of this?
Well, yes and no. Not from remote viewing. But I'll ask you this. If we were to have these tremendous winds you're talking about, where would the energy to drive them come from, ultimately?
Jet stream, I guess.
Beyond that?
Beyond that.
What drives our planet, our weather machine? The sun.
Well, the sun, I guess, yes.
Well, it does. It's the thermal and electromagnetic and magnetic interaction, the solar wind, etc.
Yes.
We function. If the sun goes out, believe me, the planet's weather will stop.
Would it actually stop, Stan?
Yeah, we would freeze over and just go into a, an ice cube state.
So
we have to have the sunlight. What I'm trying to get to is this. There is growing concern, very much so, about the stability of the output of our sun. It is increasing. It is a variable energy output star now. It's been upgraded.
Oh.
Now, we are reasonably certain from ancient writings and from Nostradamus as well, that there will be a time when we see a double sun, whether it be from cloud occlusion or dust or smoke, or whether it actually be the sun itself, the phase state changing, where we have a core that's brighter than the outer shell, and it looks like to. I don't know. We do know that the energy is picking up from the sun, and this could very well increase our global warming. We think it has already, and cause tremendous weather storms. Now, you know for a fact that we've had a 10% increase in natural disasters over the last 12 months.
Yes.
And if you look at your weather right now across the United States, the tornadoes, the rainstorms, the hailstorms, this is not normal. We're having a lot more than we normally get.
So, that certainly is true with respect to the United States. Now, you're in Australia, so maybe you can tell us, is this a worldwide phenomenon, as you would imagine it would be, or is it... Yes?
Yes. Yes, we've had very unusual weather. We've just come through a bout of electric storms here in the West, where we hardly ever have this kind of stuff. The eastern states have had near flooding in Queensland and New South Wales. Those are states. Tremendous rains over the last few months. We've had crop damage, and we've had drought-stricken areas. We've just had tremendous reversals of climate. And that's just our country. I mean, in India, they've had tremendous flooding and hurricanes this year. Where else? I haven't checked on Africa. I'm sure we've got problems over there. But it is not just a U.S. phenomenon. It is widespread.
Well, let me tell you how serious it is in the U.S. Through our farm belt, there were reports on our networks here, Stan, that our farm belt is in the process, get this, of turning into a desert. Now, if the American farm belt turns into a desert, we've got problems.
It's the grapes of wrath, Steinbeck's grapes of wrath again.
Stan, I've got somebody here who desperately would like an address, a telephone number, and or a postal address to get in touch with you, or an email address. What can you give people to get in touch with you?
Well, if they need a phone number, they can ring International 619-291-8154. If you have fax, you can fax on International 619-291-7252. But you need to ring me on the other number first to tell me to get off the Internet, because that's my Internet line as well. that's accomplishing something. My postal address is P.O. Box 71, Kalamunda, that's K-A-L-A-M for Mary, U-N for Nelly, D-A, Kalamunda, West Australia, Australia, 6076. We only have four digits in our postcodes, our zip codes, 6076. The email is Standeyo, without any blanks, S-T-A-N-D-E-Y-O, .au, sorry. iinet.net.au, and that'll get to me here in Australia. If you get to me here that way, I'll give you the webpage address later, because it gets longer.
All right. Very good, Stan. Hold on. We're not done. We'll do at least another 30 minutes. Very interesting stuff. Stay right where you are, okay?
Okay.
Stan Deo in Perth, Australia.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself,
we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
My guest is Stan Deo, a surprise visit. Stan is in Perth, Australia. Stan has one of the wildest backgrounds you'd ever want to hear about. And that is what you're hearing about this morning. I'm just sort of holding on to him. He happened to call, so it's one of those things. That's what talk radio is all about. If it's planned, it's generally poop. If it just happens, it's fun. That's my style of talk radio. So we'll get back to Stan in a moment. Back now to Perth, Australia, and Stan Deo. And Stan, I would like to read you a bit of the report. Here's what happened. We've got a scientist, a very prestigious scientist, working on what we call arts parts. It got to the point, Stan, where there were only about three or four locations that could do an isotope study on these parts, specifically the magnesium bismuth layered piece, the very strange piece we've got. So Linda Moulton Howe and myself split the cost. Linda flew down to Washington, D.C., to the Carnegie Institute in Washington, D.C., where they did an isotope analysis. Now, the metals generally checked out to be within range of that which you would expect to find on Earth. But I'm reading now from the report, most striking anomaly of the testing was the amount of ions emitted by our sample. As Dr. Eric Hare states in paragraph 1 of his report, the bismuth magnesium sample gave count rates of Mg plus ions, which were enhanced by 60 times normal over pure magnesium metal standard. So it is a very, very striking anomaly indeed. I mentioned to Richard Hoagland the results, and he said, well, you know what you've got there, don't you? He said, the next thing you've got to do is a crystalline test, which they are going to perform. And he said, what you're probably going to find is if they apply a high voltage, up to 1,000,000 volts, to this piece, that sucker is going to rise right up off the kitchen table.
The Townsend-Brown effect, the Byfield-Brown effect.
That's right. And so I thought I would read you that part of the report, fairly striking, from Carnegie, and see if you agreed with that assessment.
Well, the assessment I can't argue with because I haven't had anything to, like any testing to do myself, but I will go later after we get off the air. I've got Townsend-Brown's lab notes from the time when he was in the Bonson Corporation in Salem, just after the French experiments. And I do remember they were playing with a number of metals in their devices there. And I have the film, the 51-minute, 16-millimeter color film from the lab day by day during that period of 1958 to 59, late 59. So I will try to see what I can dig up off the blackboards there and off of the notebooks.
Okay, well, this coincides, Stan, with everything we've been hearing from people who know about such things and have been writing to us. They all say what you've got is a diamagnetic material.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
And so it really is getting pretty deep. This is going to be a lot of fun. Sometimes it's fun, Stan. Sometimes it's a burden.
Well, I think it'll be less of a burden soon. I think you've probably made enough noise. They're going to have to do something now. Just one technical point. You don't necessarily have to put the high voltage on a structure like that. You can ring it at a certain frequency, and it will start to convert ambient energy into electricity and develop the high voltage itself.
That's right on target with what people have been saying. All right, very good. Let us go back to the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air with Stan Deo in Perth, Australia. Hello.
Yes, hello. Stan.
Hello.
Yes, sir, where are you?
I'm from Portland, Oregon.
Okay, go ahead.
Stan, got a question about stationary aircraft and the patent at Aptione, where they said they had an aircraft that was stationary for 10,000 hours, I believe is what it was.
Where is this?
Apti had a patent where they said it had an aircraft that was logged to stay in the air for more than 10,000 hours. I believe that's something like 400 days.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you had any more information on this subject.
As you are referring to it, I would ask you just to help me again that the name of the place or the company, Apti, or can you spell that for me?
APTI, Arco Power Technologies Incorporated.
All right, was that?
Ah, okay, all right, all right.
I think I know what he's talking about now. Is that probably the solar-powered thing? Maybe not.
Could be. Staying in the air, I mean, you could if you can replenish your thermal constants there, you could put a hot air balloon in the air for that long. While I've got you on the phone, Portland.
You don't have him on the phone anymore.
He's not on the phone. All right. Well, Art, where he's sitting, about 2 or 3 hours ago, they had a 5.5 Richter in near the Juan de Fuca southern end.
Oh, really?
And a second one has just occurred now. Then, just a second, just coming on screen. The second one is 3.5. It's an aftershock of that one. It occurred at 8:15 in the evening. I think that's their local time.
And where was that?
That was off the coast of Northern California in the southern portion of the Juan de Fuca region, 5.5.
And now they've had an aftershock to it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, already.
All right.
It's pretty busy between Hawaii and Tonga and there. All that whole area, there's a long line that you can see on the chart activating.
Something's heating up out there. Okay, wild card line, you're on the air with Stan Dale in Australia. Hello.
This is the west of the Rockies line?
No, wild card.
Okay, well, that's fine. Either way, this is absolutely beautiful. This is Bob from Santa Maria?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Stan, is it possible to develop as an individual or as a young child through hypnosis, the remote viewing? And if so, which it appears what I've been able to do, now I'm 48, and since I've been 5 years old, I've been using hypnosis to go to sleep by focusing in on unsolved problems.
Yeah.
And about 25 years ago, I was given an image, if you will, of a seven-level theory of everything, if you will. By that, I'm saying it deals with energy as substantive. It takes and develops a wave. The waves interact to form a harmonic matrix at level 3.
Yeah.
Matrix units interact at level 4 to form particles. The particles
right.
Then, of course, on up the ladder. Now, the individual waves at level 2 created at level 4, if you will, actually form the basis for the conditions of each of the four fundamental forces.
All right.
And the development of particles from there. When I heard Art, when I heard your reporting on the bismuth, one of the things that I have been working on in night was the use of a magnetic field, stationary magnetic field, one moving and one stationary, and being able to block one magnetic field with the other. In other words, if you had two North Poles. You know, and one in motion coming up to it by blocking the field in a compression mode in, as with an engine, and then releasing the block, then you would be able to generate power.
All right. Comments, Stan?
Well, to begin with, what you the first question, I think, was something to do with your ability to have remote viewing from childhood using hypnosis or
yes.
a form of it.
Yes.
Certainly, I know they used hypnosis on us as teenagers when they were training us at the academy and after that. So, yes, I suppose it's possible. I have used the technique you're talking about as well for a number of years as I go to sleep. And possibly that's what keeps it going. I don't know. The magnetic field things, hard for me to say. The crop circle photos that Art has on on the webpage there, the recent ones over at Stonehenge, and the one that looks like a double DNA thing, looks, in my opinion, more like the double DNA thing, like a wave interaction between two nuclear or celestial bodies. It looks more like atoms with waves probably 90 degrees out of phase or so. Using wave theory, I think that there's a lot more that we can learn from the universe that we're in, a lot more effects and new techniques that we can discover. So, unfortunately, I haven't done what you're speaking of, so I don't know whether it will work or what will happen.
Before we go on, I just received a fax from somebody named Jan in French Polynesia, believe it or not, Stan. It says, "Hi, Art. I've got a question for Stan in Australia.
Good grief.
This is Tahiti," he says, "and several of our outer islands of French Polynesia suffered serious damage this last weekend when 4 to 6 meter waves swept through the territory. These high seas came from the roaring 40s south of the Austral Islands. Does he know if there were any recent earthquakes in the area that would have caused this reaction? He's been trying to call in and hasn't made it yet.
All right. There have been some quakes in the area in the South 40s. I'll just have to, as we speak, drag up the images for a week ago. But, yes, that area down there has been very active. I don't know why. It hasn't been showing terribly brilliantly on our thermal change charts, so it must be very deep, say like under 600 miles deep, and perhaps moving closer to the surface. Today is, what, the 23rd? Go back about over, okay. How much do we want, about a week?
Well, today is Stan, actually is the 25th now, and it was the 24th yesterday, so.
Yeah, sorry, all right. Sorry, all right. It's old age. I'm reading my charts here. Yes, there was something there. I can't quite tell the latitude from here. I'm just trying to measure by count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So, yeah. It would be on a line if you took to South America, to the little crook where Chile is, you know, the top of Chile where there's a little bend in the west coast of South America. Draw a line straight across from there over and underneath the bottom portion of the Aleutian Islands. Where those two cross, there was a probably, it looks like about a Richter 6 or so earthquake. I haven't quite got the hard charts in front of me. It's just the color charts.
So, in other words, that might account for 4 to 6 meter waves.
Could possibly be, yes.
All right.
And there has been other activity.
Well, good morning to you there in French Polynesia, actually in Marais, Tahiti. All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Dale in Perth, Australia. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes, sir. Where are you?
Hello, Stan. I'm in Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale, Florida. All right.
Yeah. Stan, back to your the issue of temperature variances.
Yeah.
I'm an Everglades enthusiast. Pretty big one. I'm there every day almost. And something I've noticed over the last 2 weeks to a month, something I can't explain, is really heated water. Is it something I could feel? Is that
possible? Yes. What you're talking about is probably hotter than the norm.
Yeah, because I'm there every day. I notice that.
The temperatures we normally see on the naval charts are about plus or minus 3 degrees C, or a maximum spread of about 6 degrees centigrade.
Right.
But certainly there would be local conditions that might let that heat build up in certain little pockets. I have been noticing a lot of heat build up around the southern coast on the west side of Florida, and little sporadic ones on the east portion.
Is it something?
And I don't know why.
Would you notice that also in the Everglades interiorly?
Well, the Everglades, you know, that's over land, really,
yeah, right.
Sort of. And I can only look at these vectors. In fact, I'm looking at them right now, as of about 18 hours ago. If you're looking at a map of Florida,
uh-huh.
That the tip of it that's closest to Cuba,
right?
There is a thermal temperature increase there,
uh-huh.
Of about 3 degrees centigrade up, and it's over an area about what to compare it to? Anyway, it's on the southern tip there,
right.
Equal to about the area of the southern tip. But if you go up toward close to where you're going to join the mainland,
uh-huh.
In the Atlantic side, there's a cooling in the water. On the Gulf side, there is a heating all along the coast, and looking like it's moving inland and, you know, perhaps into the area you're talking about.
Yeah, that could be. It's striking. The fishermen here are talking about it. Is that so? Yeah. You know,
how much temperature are you talking about? Are we talking like 10 degrees? Or?
Well, I haven't measured it, and I don't know anyone who has, but it's something you can feel. You can even feel it on your face as you're canoeing through areas.
Well, if it's that serious, then maybe somebody ought to measure it.
Yeah, well.
Well, why don't you do that? Why don't you get a temperature of it and have some hard data to get back to us?
All right, that's a good idea. I will do that.
All right, my friend. Thank you very much for the call. Boy. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Dale in Australia. Hello.
Hi, Stan. Hello, Art. How are you doing today?
Fine. Where are you?
I'm calling from Bremerton, Washington.
All right.
Up here in Como country.
Yes, sir.
Yes, to Stan, back to a little bit earlier talking about ideas that he got. Do you feel that those ideas that you get in the morning time frames might have been something that you've started gleaning from your training that you received for remote viewing?
It's possible. As I said, I never knew
that I was in anybody's mind or anything like that. It was like it was a huge database without personality, and it was like three-dimensional color movies that you could move in by command. And certainly this could have been some kind of a post-hypnotic or a post-indoctrination or training event. I don't know how to separate the two unless we go back in with hypnosis again and dig it out, and I have never been that keen to do it again.
Yeah. That's what I was curious about that, and then the other question I had for Art was in regards to a gentleman you had on your show several weeks ago discussing energy sources and cold fusion.
Yes.
I think it was Dr. Brown.
Yes.
Are you going to be having him on the show anytime soon?
The answer is yes. Keep listening. Here's one for you, Stan. Art, please ask Stan Deo, and I don't know what I'm talking about here, but I'm going to read this. If an aerodynamic craft employing fast-moving paired electrons, superconductive in other words, over the top of a craft, triangular or whatever, could produce less air pressure above the craft, in effect producing lift from the greater air pressure below. If indeed bismuth is a medium used for paired electrons allowing movement in the holes created by 4F and 3D overlapping, would not this allow for paired electrons to be used in this system?
Wow. Boy, that's a whoever that is has done his homework. Yes, he's talking about the valence shell overlap. Yes, I suppose they could. They could. It's a natural extension to use this entrainment or breaststroking vectoring from moving from plasma gases into paired electrons and into what produces magnetic fields, I think, between atoms. So, I think probably that's what we're looking at, something similar to that, yes.
Stan, I've had this material for some time now. Unfortunately, I've managed, before it got too public, to get it scattered geographically and in various scientific hands. The question I've got for you is, what do you think they, in quotes, how do you think they, in quotes, are going to react to this breaking story as it continues?
All right, I'm not sure that they are going to be that unhappy about it, really. I've maintained for some time that when the announcement does come of what's been covered up, it's going to have to be done in a manner to avoid, the plebs picking up their pitchforks and storming on Washington. It's got to be done in a manner that they will accept the fact that they haven't been told for so long as whatever excuse put forward is acceptable. And I think perhaps they may protest a bit. They may protest loudly, but I think they will let it come out in that respect and let the people think they've won the battle and feel justified or vindicated from it.
Another question, Stan, might be, I wonder if they, in our quotes, are the ones who sent it to me.
Well, Art, I've got to ask you a pretty obvious question about they and that package you got. You had a fellow there who said that his grandfather was the guy that got the parcel.
That's right.
Got the particles.
Right.
And left it to him in a will. You have the guy that sent it to you saying he is still a serving member in the armed forces.
As a matter of fact, an officer, yes.
Yeah, and he tells you, I don't want to go public with this. I don't want any trouble. So I'm going to use a pseudonym, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then he tells you enough information in almost the first letter about we're on maneuvers in the East Coast here, and I'm in this, and my grandfather was assigned to that unit.
Yeah, Stan, I know. But the guy intentionally distorted some of the information about himself. Stan, we're at the top of the hour. You got more time?
Sure.
All right. We'll do some more then. Stan Deo from Perth, Australia. He'll be back. We'll be back.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 24th of July, 1996.
And I'll tell you, this is turning into one of those magical broadcast nights. You're not going to believe it. Ron in Birmingham, Alabama sent me a fax and says, Dear Art, maybe, in quotes, they will tell you you should mind your own bismuth. Cute, Ron. Now, believe it or not, let's make sure we've still got Stan in Australia. Stan, are you there?
I am. Good day.
All right. Good day, as you would say, or do say. Now, let's go to French Polynesia and Tahiti. And here is Jan. Jan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Jan, welcome. You are our first person on the air from Tahiti. And you are in Moorea. Is that the way it is pronounced?
Moorea.
Moorea. I'm sorry about that.
Moorea. Mm-hmm. It means yellow lizard.
Does it really? All right. Could you give us an update? What has happened there in Tahiti? What 4 to 6 meter waves?
Yes, they came from the south, from the Roaring Forties, down at the 40th parallel. It came up through the Austral Islands, which are the islands furthest south of Tahiti and French Polynesia. And this last Thursday, the 18th, at Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, this past weekend, while we were watching the opening of the Olympic Games, part of our island was being destroyed.
Agreed.
Yes, the waves hit the south end of Tahiti, and a little girl was killed, 5-year-old girl was killed when a wall fell on her. In one of the southern coasts of Tahiti. And a 20-year-old French fellow who was here on vacation visiting his father, he was a student from Nancy, France, he was swept away. He took off to go explore the big waves on his boogie board and was never seen again. And several people, about 100 homes were damaged in Tahiti. On the island of Moorea, where I live, we have 100 homes on the southern coast that were destroyed.
Wow.
The hospital was flooded. One of the hotels, the Sofitel Iora, was destroyed. Several of the overwater bungalows that they were building, the overwater restaurant and pier. On the island of Huahine, there was a lot of damage to hotels and homes, and, of course, roads being swept away. And the island of Bora Bora, we've had quite a bit of damage there. One hotel, which is one of our top hotels, international class hotels, the Moana Beach, Bora Bora, will be closed now until maybe November. They had just added 10 overwater bungalows. This is a 5-star hotel. And Maupiti, Raiatea, all of these these islands suffered some damage. The Leeward Society Islands and the Windward Islands of the Societies.
All right, Jan, that is very serious.
Tuamotu's as well.
Yeah, it's very serious news, Jan, and none of that news made it back to the States. Stan, were you aware of that in Australia?
Well, no, I missed it too. I'm sitting here. I'm sure that there must be something on the news net somewhere, but I certainly hadn't heard any major news broadcasts about it at all.
Well,
in fact, I'm looking at the thermal map. While she was talking, I just ran today's change map for that area, and it's cooling down from something kind of a C, like the letter C shape that's run through that region. With a temperature increase next to a temperature decrease in the Solomons, I wouldn't have picked that area from what I see today as extremely prone to a quake or volcano. But again, I must stress that area is really quite interesting because the activity seems to be, the seismic activity seems to be about 600 miles down on the average, which makes it hard for us to detect it the way we're doing it. But people using magnetic fields can probably detect it better. I'm going to have to contact some people in the States and see what they have for that area.
All right. Well, thank you. And so there you are. Apparently there was some thermal heating, but Stan did not call that one. And I'm sorry to hear this has happened to your islands. I am curious, Jan, very curious, how you managed to find our program there.
Well, I was fiddling with the radio one night. I have this really old radio and it has a nice long antenna, and I picked you up one night. Well, you see, I used to listen to KNX. I thought it was kind of a kick to sit here in Moorea and listen to the traffic reports on KNX Los Angeles. And you were very close to there on my radio dial, and I got you one night, and I stayed there. I don't listen to the traffic report anymore. I listen to all these wonderful subjects you cover.
All right.
Which is right up my alley. I love those things, you know, except the hate calls, of course, the hatred calls.
Well, except the hatred calls, yes, indeed. Well, we're glad to know that French Polynesia listens. I've been getting postcards of beautiful island girls from Tahiti for a couple of years now, but you're the first one who has called.
I do know another one here, and, of course, I'm spreading the word around. I met a fellow yesterday who's here on vacation, and he said, he's from California, and he said, oh, that's my favorite talk show. So I said, well, come on over, and we're going to listen to him together. So you've got an audience building up around here. I'm spreading the word around, and I'm a journalist, so I've got a big mouth.
All right. Jan, thank you for opening your big mouth this morning for us. And you take
thank
care.
Thank you, Art.
All right.
Keep it up.
Bye-bye. And, San, we'll be right back to you, and I want to open two other lines, if I can. My West of the Rockies line for Hawaii. Would everybody else please hold off, because there has been a series of quakes occurring in Hawaii. And then the other group I would like to open is my first time. So West of the Rockies for Hawaii at 1-800-618-8255. Hawaii only. 1-800-618-8255. Everybody else hold off. Hawaii only right now. And my first-time caller line, let us open that for the Caribbean islands only, at area code 702-727-1222. That's 702-727-1222. And everybody else, please hold off. Once again, I want to say we're holding our first-time caller line for our friends in the Caribbean, St. Thomas, in that area. So if that's where you are, call area code 702-727-1222, 702-727-1222 from the Caribbean, where there is a little something or another whipping up on the weather maps that I've been seeing. Right now, back to Stan Dale in Perth. Are you there, Stan?
I am indeed.
All right. Well, let's give it a try. On our first-time caller line, you're on the air. Where are you calling from, please? Hello there.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Where are you?
St. Paul.
Where? St. Paul?
Yes.
Where is that? St. Paul, Minnesota? Okay, we're holding this for the Caribbean, sir. I appreciate your call. Thank you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Dale in Perth, Australia. Hello.
Hi, my name is Michael. I'm in Honolulu.
Honolulu, yes, sir.
You said you wanted some calls from out here.
That's right. That's right. You have been having a series of earthquakes, haven't you?
I haven't heard. I heard something about some a few days ago. I haven't heard anything today on any.
What is the latest, Stan?
There have been in the last 24 hours about 8 major ones anywhere, at least that they showed up on the USGS plot south of the Kilauea event, probably about 100 miles or so.
So those are over on the big island in south?
It's south of the island in the sea. That, you know, the island that or the submerged volcano,
right,
about 3,000. What's the name of that one?
Oh, I could have told you 2 seconds ago.
Well, if you think of it, interrupt.
Now,
I'm curious about something. Why were what's the waves that they were talking about in Tahiti? I mean, we're also getting waves here, not as big as they're talking about in Tahiti, but we've had some real nice 6 to 8 foot waves going the last few days.
Really?
Is this unusual?
No, it's coming off of a big storm off of south of New Zealand. So I'm wondering what connection you're making between the seismic activity and the waves in Tahiti.
Sorry, you're saying that a storm in New Zealand is causing waves where you are?
Uh-huh. This happens every summer.
A storm in New Zealand? You're in Honolulu?
South of New Zealand and in the Antarctic.
But you're up in Hawaii, right?
Correct. That's where we get our best waves on the south shore every summer.
All right. Well, I
didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either, and I didn't think that a storm could do that from New Zealand.
Yeah.
Oh, it could, huh?
Look on if you get onto my webpage and go to the naval feeds for wave heights planetary across the planet for the entire ocean.
Yes.
You will see that they will get up to something like 12 meters or like, what's that, about 36-foot wave heights in the center of these storms where the low pressure is.
Heavens.
And they make some tremendous waves.
All right. On our first-time caller line, you're on the air with Stan Deo. Where are you calling from, please?
Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay. We're holding this line for the Caribbean, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I appreciate your call. Thank you. A wild card line, you're on the air with Stan Deo. Hello. Hello? No, west of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Deo. Good morning.
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Nope, guess not. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Deo. Hello.
Well, hello, Art. This is Jim from Philadelphia, east of the Rockies.
Philadelphia, way east, yeah.
Yes, I was listening to your new affiliate in Washington, and I'm sad that it's not going to be in Philadelphia. But anyway, I have a theory on the quickening.
Yes, sir?
With Major Ed Dames and Art's parts, because he said that the parts were from a time machine. Correct?
Correct. That is what he said, yes.
Well, maybe the government, are trying to rewrite history. I was wondering if Stan had heard any theories of the Earth and our supposed entry into what they call the photon band?
I have heard it mentioned. I don't know. It's something out of my kind of physics realm.
Well, in theory, it's sort of like they think it might be like a cosmic reset switch.
Yeah.
And that if
how can I argue the point? I don't know. I don't have information to counter that. All I can say is I've listened to it, and I've wondered myself. Certainly there are ancient writings that do speak of changes that will occur in time even as we get closer to the end of this age. Things will appear to be quicker. I mean, just like Art says, the quickening. Even the biblical account says it's like a woman in childbirth getting toward the end, things go faster and faster. And some of the Aboriginal dances and the American Indian dances of prophecy get faster and faster tempos toward the end of the dance for this time, indicating the speeding up of things, the quickening.
Right, and so, it just seems that those that are doomed to, or those that don't remember their history are doomed to repeat it, and it just seems like history seems to be rewriting itself in different ways.
Boy, isn't that a fact. All right, Stan, here comes one from South Florida. Where in South Florida are you, sir?
I'm down here around Sunrise Plantation.
All right, welcome to the program. You're on the air with Stan Deo in Australia.
Stan, hi.
Hi.
I'm a new listener. I've been listening for a few weeks since this show came down to the station. Anyway, I have something here I got in the mail some time ago. I just had to go through a lot of stuff to get it, and this is something really hot. This is super hot, Art. I mean, it's either one of the hottest things to come along, or you're just going to one of the biggest frauds of all time. Have you ever heard of something called the Zon Network?
No.
Or may I throw some names out?
No.
Mark Hamilton.
What is the network, sir?
It's something. They're saying this is something that's been supposedly banned in other countries, and according to this, they're trying to get rid of it in the United States. And it's there's a lot of stuff in here. There's a guy. These names mean anything? Jeff Hansen.
No, don't give his names. Just tell us what is it.
It's something called Neotech. Zon
Discovery. Right, but what is it, sir? I mean,
It says, okay, I'll try to put this in the best perspective I can here.
Okay.
It says the power that Zon delivers to the ordinary person, staggering, too staggering for comfort. No, I'm not going to read all that.
Don't read anything. I mean, is this some sort of a concentration meditation thing that will give you power? Is that the idea?
Yeah, well, it says this, is they originate out of Henderson, Nevada, right in your backyard there.
Of course.
It says, and then there's a thing printed by, it says, the ad hoc committee to halt the publication and circulation in America of a subversive literature called Zon.
Well, we still have the First Amendment here in America. What about that down in Australia, Stan? Can you print anything, or are there things banned in Australia?
Well, I'm not aware of them there. I think they do their fair share of censoring, you know, pretty weird porno magazines and pedophile magazines. But other than that, I think it's fairly open slather down here.
What about scientific literature that's out on the edge?
Oh, we have heaps of it. Nexus Magazine here that I write in is, they publish alternate health, cancer cures, technology of, you know, free energy things. Hey, while we're on that subject, quickly, did you ever see that the video of that guy over in California, Steve something, that had that that free energy coil?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Did you see it?
As a matter of fact, the Tesla conference is going on now in Colorado. Stan, here's one for you. Stan is correct. This is from David. There is a difference in the amount of photons released now by the sun. The comet Hale-Bopp will reach its closest point at 0.92 astronomical units in 4 of 97. It is proposed that carbon monoxide is the driver of the optical activity of the comet. The solar wind has changed. Look at the comet Hayataki. It is emitting X-rays due to the acceleration of photons from the solar wind.
Hey, listen, tell that guy to fax you his contact address for me off air.
In other words, you want to talk to this person.
Yeah.
All right, David. As a matter of fact, Stan, I've got the contact information for David. I've got a telephone number, but I'm hesitant.
You can email me later if you want.
Yeah, well, I'm a little hesitant to give it out without his permission.
Oh, okay.
I'd rather do it the other way around, let David contact you. All right, what I would like to have you do, Stan, is stand by. We're at the bottom of the hour.
Okay.
And we'll do one more half hour. How'd that be?
Well, okay.
Well,
twist my arm.
Okay. All right. It's consider it twisted. Once again, the other area I want to hear from yet is the Caribbean. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from the 24th of July, 1996.
Conscience, I guess. If I was walking in your shoes, I wouldn't worry none. While you and your friends are worried about me, I'm having
fun. Premier Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 24, 1996.
Good morning, everybody, with Stan Deo in Perth, Australia. Stan, are you still there?
I am indeed.
All right.
Still here.
Good. Let's give this a try. Let's go all the way over to the U.S. Caribbean and the Virgin Islands in St. Thomas. You're on the air if you are there. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir. You're in St. Thomas?
Yes, I am here.
Well, welcome to the program. You're on the air with Stan Deo in Perth, Australia.
Oh, my goodness. That is... Are we conference?
Yes, I hope so. Stan, do you hear him okay?
I do. Hi there.
Well, I guess you've linked us up all the way around the world.
Yes, I guess we have. Do you have any... You're in a very interesting area there in the Caribbean from a seismic point of view. So do you have any questions?
Well, I don't have any questions, but I have some information from some native people that live in New Zealand and from native people that live in the Iroquois Nations. They had warned me several years ago that there was going to be problems in these areas, apparently. I don't know how they would know something like that, but they did warn me about it.
Well, Stan...
Which areas were those?
In the Caribbean and in the areas around New Zealand.
Right.
As a matter of fact, Stan, as you know, his island damn near got flattened by a hurricane last year.
Yeah.
And apparently, Chief Leon Shenandoah from the Iroquois Confederacy had warned us that we would have problems here. I think it's very strange that these people would know of these things, you know, so many years before. I find it very weird.
It's weird, but you must remember that many cultures of the Aboriginal Indians and natives in Africa and here in Australia have this ability to look forward in time. You just can't deny the fact that they see these things.
In any case, I find it very strange because there are these cultures that say they have the ability to release these strange forces into the world and create destruction.
I know they do say that. The Aboriginals here talk about getting into long lines and almost circular things with a special pole they have, and they beat on the ground for days. And this is supposed to affect weather downstream somewhere a great deal. And many of the older cultures seem to have some sort of a link to the Earth environment this way. Whether it works or not is another thing, but certainly they do have that claim down here as well.
Well, as long as we've got you on the line in the Caribbean, are there natives in the Caribbean that claim the same sorts of powers?
I'm part Carib Indian and Arawak as well, and no, I've never heard of anything like this at all. I mean, I went to represent my group of people at a Sundance in Big Mountain in Arizona 3 years ago, and this is where I got all this information.
I've never
heard of any such thing.
Could I just ask you a question? I hate to sound dumb, but I've heard two explanations for what a Sundance is and accomplishes. Can you tell me what your Sundance was for?
This was for world peace.
What does a Sundance do? What is its function? That's what I'm trying to ask, I guess.
Well, the dancers and the people that support the dancers go there and they dance literally in the sun for about 4 days and pray.
What do they wear and eat?
They wear as little as possible because usually it's about 112 degrees and we eat very little.
So it's almost a fasting thing. All right, well, listen, thank you very much for your call all the way from the Caribbean. Let's go out the other way to Hawaii. You're on the air with Stan Deo. Hello.
Hello, Art. I just want to say first that you have a nice webpage, and I'd like to know if Stan knows how big the UFO that they say they have is.
The ones that I've seen were probably, I'm just estimating by laying bodies across it, one, two, three, probably about 30 feet in diameter or so. But I, that's not saying they weren't bigger or smaller. That's just the ones I've seen.
About 30 feet.
Yep.
Do you know the one that you said that the U.S. might have?
Yeah.
How big that one might be? The one with the hole in the middle?
Yes, it's around that size. But again, look, I've been out of the program for a long time, and I'm sure that knowing the technology, they could have built bigger and smaller ones. And there again, how many of the things that are reported in the skies are man-made and how many are not? It's such a hard question to answer, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
All right. Thank you. Graham Hancock, Zachariah Sitchin, and others are basically predicting a 30-degree pole shift of the Earth's crust. It is also predicted to be caused by a magnetic shift in the sun, which affects the Earth's magnetic poles. As a professional, what is your opinion, Stan, of that scenario? Jim in Needles, California, asking by fax.
Well, I don't know whether I've been promoted to professional, but anyway, my opinion, for what it's worth, is that, yes, the Earth's magnetic field is affected by behavior of the solar magnetic field and the solar wind. Case in point, I mean, a few months back, Art, you and I were talking about a magnetic field variation where the compass moved 22 degrees suddenly.
That's right.
All right. Well, now, after that, I called the various government organizations that do this for a living, and I talked to a number of them and found out that, yes, due to an interaction between the solar wind, charged magnetic particles from the sun, with our atmosphere and with our magnetopause, we do get isolated magnetic storms like that that'll tweak your compass 20-some-odd degrees, even up to 30 sometimes, for a few hours and then back.
That's a big variation. Woof.
Well, it is, but it's localized. It's not across the whole planet. It's just localized magnetic storms, and they are a nuisance, and they can cause plane wrecks and all kinds of stuff. If we do have the kind of behavior in the sun that I suspect personally is going to happen shortly, look, we'll have a number of things happen, but I'm sure that it will affect our magnetic field to the point that we could see an axis shift. And I say in the next 10 years, maybe less.
All right, we seem to be globe-trotting, so let's go to Anchorage, Alaska, way up north. You're on the air, sir.
Mr. Bell.
Yes, you're
thank
in Anchorage.
Thank you for taking my call, because I realized that you wanted to leave this line open for...
You're in Anchorage, is that correct?
Sir?
You're in Anchorage?
Yes, I am Anchorage. I know you want to leave this line open for another part of the world.
No, that's quite all right. We heard from them. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, the HAARP project?
Yes.
We have just experienced for probably a good hour, maybe two, a complete power outage.
Oh, my.
And about 9 o'clock this morning, we also had an earthquake.
Stan, do you have any record of an earthquake in the Anchorage area or in Alaska?
Yeah, there has been one registered. I don't know the exact value for it. Just wait 1 second. I'll pull it up while we're talking.
All right. So, your caller, do you know whether HAARP has been activated or is active now?
Well, I can tell you that I was told that the HAARP project is active.
All right.
Southern Alaska, at 1647 GMT today, an earthquake 4.4.
Okay.
Andrian Off Islands further south of that. Central Alaska, one at 3.7. Nothing really major over 4.4 that I can see at the moment.
All right.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
I think it might be worthy to note that the cloud formation was extremely unusual, and that an individual who works at the airport here in Anchorage, Alaska, reported that all of the radios, they call them lead radios, that are used by the people that load the luggage on the airport,
sure,
on the airplane and things, because they're all lithium battery operated,
yes,
they all went dead simultaneously.
Oh, my.
At the exact same time.
Oh, my.
This is unusual.
For
actually, caller, up in your area, even though the earthquake was not major, I guess what our standard would be, but there, I noticed something on my thermal change maps, which indicates there's certainly a lot of thermoelectric energy changing hands all the way up from the Aleutians up into Alaska and inland, and I don't know why, it's just there.
All right, well, that news about lithium batteries going dead like that is fairly serious news, and we're going to have to follow up on that, Stan. All right.
Yeah, I mean, to all go down like that together, it's definitely weird.
All right, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Deo in Australia. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Shane from Manchester, Tennessee.
Yes, sir.
First, I just wanted to touch on a quick question or a quick answer you asked all of us earlier about if we had a chance to ask God one question.
Well, that's not what we're doing right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Stan is not God.
I was just going to ask him for the lotto numbers for the next
He's a great guy, but he's not God.
Okay. Wanted to say that I guess I'm a physics major. I'm a graduate student.
Yes, sir.
Working on my master's. And it kind of irks me sometimes when I know your listeners mean well when they call in about science and stuff like that, but they tend to, I guess, get the facts.
Well, they're not all physics majors.
Well, I noticed that because the last your facts who called in said that the accelerating photons.
Yes.
Well, last time I checked, I don't think a photon can accelerate. I mean, that's just through my coursework and experience and whatnot.
You're saying the velocity of light is constant?
Yes.
Ah, that's sad. Well, I know that's what they teach, but certainly, let me ask you this. Does the velocity of light change in a different density medium?
Yes, it does.
Right. If space is not uniform, will it change its velocity through space?
If it passes through another medium, yes. But it's
not because I think what that caller meant that you're talking to before was probably the density. The photon density has increased rather than the velocity, but... Yeah, I understood what he was saying.
All right, and I think I almost do now myself. Very good. Thank you, Stan. Hold on a moment. Back now to Stan Deo in Perth, Australia, and our first-time caller line. You're on the air with Stan in Australia. Where are you, please?
Hello, Art?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Shane calling you from Canada.
Where in Canada, Shane?
From Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan, all right.
Right up in the middle. I've been listening to your show now for, I think a few years.
When I was a little guy, I was kind of questioning a little bit different on the topic here. You were saying at one time that you and your wife had run a daycare. Is this correct?
No.
No?
Never.
Okay, I think somebody was calling and talking about it, but I remember listening to you a long time ago. But the biggest reason why I'm calling is I can pick up your show for about an hour every night.
Right.
And other than that, the only way I can actually get a hold of you is over the Internet, which is kind of new to me. I tried emailing you. Didn't do too well. But
well, Stan has to rely on the Internet down there in Australia, don't you, Stan?
I certainly do. I listen to it on headphones while we're on the air.
But it's unbelievable the way the Internet's going. But actually why I'm calling is I'm looking for a good radio, and I was kind of frustrated because you had advertised one over your show many times, and it had a 1-800 number that would not work here in Canada.
Yes, I can give you the Canadian telephone number, I think. I should be able to give it to you. I tell you what I'll do. I promise to get that Canadian phone number on the air for you. I just don't happen to have it right here this moment, okay?
Okay.
I will get it on for you, though. Thank you very much. Everything's getting so damn international, Stan, that it's hard to keep track of all the numbers.
I know. If I ring one AT&T operator, I get hooked to you, and if I ring another one, I get charged. they're amazing.
Maybe you rang the one that's charging you, Stan.
Thanks for that. That's really made my day.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Deo in Perth, Australia. Where are you, please?
Hello?
Yes, sir. Where are you?
I'm on the Big Island in Hawaii.
Oh, on the Big Island.
And we have, I think it's the name is Lo'ihi. I'm at the south point of the island. There's a underwater volcano about 20 miles offshore. And we've got reports that there's been about 1,500 tremors in the last week. And the Civil Defense Corps director is concerned that there might be an eruption and produce a local tsunami.
I'm looking at it now from the satellite imagery of that area and the earthquakes. North of there, between or south of Manaloa and west of Kilauea, there's been an awful lot of activity of quake action there as well. Mm-hmm. Is that connected to Lo'ihi?
Yeah, that's the area. It's a
I can see it looks like a volcano under the ocean there on the internet photo coming up here.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Now, where do you live?
I live in Na'alehu, which is the southernmost community in the USA. And it's just about 20 miles southeast of actually Pahala, which is about a town about 12 miles north of us. So it says 20
north
miles.
Where?
So, in other words, he's how far are you in miles, land miles, from this underwater volcano?
I'd say, well, just guessing, maybe 10 miles.
Oh, my.
Wow.
Stan, what could occur with that volcano? I mean, this man obviously wants to know.
Well, gosh, I don't even know what's happening there other than the earthquakes. Normally, before any volcano, you will get tremors as the magma moves up and starts to push on the plug to release. You can have a nice, gentle magma, not eruption, but like flow, you know, just a pyroclastic flow come up and build higher and higher mountains. And that's a nice way for the pressure release. If, however, some water leaks in or there's a cavity of water down near the pyroclastic flow, you could have an explosive volcano, which would then make this sudden wave that they're worried about and could wet a few feet or more.
All right, caller. Well, the best thing to hope for is a new Hawaiian island. Thank you very much for the call, and good luck. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stan Deo in Perth, Australia. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello. Where are you?
In Houston, Texas.
Yes, ma'am.
Sometimes I'm a first-time caller, and I don't get to listen every night, but I've been listening quite some time. And I think when Stan first started coming on your program, is he the the guest that predicted like a ring of fire for these eruptions, volcanic eruptions and earthquakes?
Well, there's nothing predictive about the ring of fire. It's an absolute. But he has talked many times about the ring of fire, yes.
I just wanted to be sure that I had the right guest.
Yes, you do.
I had tried to call earlier before the caller from Anchorage called a few minutes ago. I had seen on our weather channel earlier today that there had been the two earthquakes in Alaska today.
Yes.
And is that part of his pattern that he's talking about?
My pattern you're talking about?
Yes.
In the case of this one today, the patterns I'm talking about change twice a day when we get the new reports from the naval satellites. Right now, my charts indicate a lot of thermal activity increase exactly where these earthquakes are occurring. And this information is about 18 hours old at the moment. It's amazing how accurate it can be sometimes, but if the clouds get in the way of our satellites, we kind of have to average data, and it gives us a bad report sometime. But right now, Hawaii shows to be part of our pattern, and south of Hawaii by about 800 miles as well.
All right. We're running woefully short on time. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Stan Dale in Perth, Australia. Hello.
Yeah, my name is Pat from Los Angeles, California.
Okay, Pat. You're going to have to speak up good and loud for us.
Yeah, I had a couple of quick questions for Stan.
All right.
I had a copy of his tapes from being on your show once before.
Yes.
And specifically, he mentioned a toroidal-shaped coil, which is interactive pulse, flat shape, rotating RF field. It's pretty interesting-sounding stuff. Has he done any experiments with those? Can he describe any of the technical details of it? And he also described some sort of a biological harm associated with it.
All right, Stan, quickly, if you can.
Oh, well, quickly, yes, I have done experiments with those. It's been a number of years since I continued them because we did suffer some damage while we were doing it. It was probably because we were using arc gap pulse units, and they were very noisy gaps. We didn't have them shielded properly. We were probably getting some RF burn in our thoracic cavity. Certainly, we had pitting in some of our joints of our fingers and our shoulders.
Wow.
And then our spine. So we were a bit reluctant to do it again until we had the proper equipment.
Whew. All right, Stan, one last time. Your phone's about to ring because we're about to terminate here. What is your phone number again? Do it.
From the United States, it would be 011-619-291-81.
All right. Stan, as always, it has been a great pleasure, and I might add, a great surprise having you on the air this morning. I suppose it's, what time is it there now?
Well, it's 5 o'clock in the evening, getting close to dinner time.
Well, have a wonderful dinner, Stan. Thanks for taking the time to spend with us, my friend.
No problem. It's been a great afternoon or evening.
Take care. Take care, Stan. That's Stan Dale in Perth, Australia. The unexpected, always.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
East of the Rockies, you are upon the air. Hello.
Howdy, Art. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, sir. Where are you?
I'm calling from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
All right.
And what are we talking about tonight? Crop circles and airplane crashes and all that kind of jazz?
All that jazz.
All that jazz.
Yeah.
Well, I love your show, Art. And I love to hear about the crop circles. Now,
They've got one up in Nebraska. I mean, the guy called from Nebraska a little while ago, and they've got one in Butte, Nebraska.
That's news to me. Yeah. And that's right when I tuned in, was when he was talking about this crop circle, and the authorities checked it out.
Yeah.
from what I understand.
Yeah, scientists, Dr. Levengood, everybody's saying it is not a hoax.
Wow. Now, I know you've talked about them before, about the English crop circles and
They're particularly impressive. I mean, they simply could not have been made by man. Period.
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 Well, what about the two pub guys in England?
Well, have you seen the photos? Obviously, you haven't.
I have not been on your website yet.
Yeah, well, if you ever get up there, get a friend to get you the photos. They can print them out, take a look. You'll agree instantly. The two guys from the pub are...
they did a pretty good job, though.
Yeah, they did a great job.
And they fooled everyone. And I'm still not actually convinced that they did it. I mean, I couldn't say for sure, could I? But now... the ones in Nebraska, I haven't seen any. There are photos. There are
sure.
Aerial photos.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know about aerial. We've got ground photos. And obviously Doug and Dave would have been hard-pressed to get to Nebraska, you know.
Doug and Dave.
Yeah.
Well, they are retired, aren't they?
They're the two pub guys, yeah.
Right.
And then the one at Stonehenge, you know, that's 10 acres. It's over 10 acres.
Wow.
That's a lot of work for Doug and Dave.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And I've heard other explanations, but it's quite a mystery. And I'm wondering when you're going to get my favorite author on your show.
Who would that be?
Well, okay, one of two. I know someone mentioned Mr. Robert Anton Wilson to you once before.
I'm working on it.
You are working on it?
Yeah, sure. I want to have him on.
And how about Mr. Terrence McKenna?
No, I don't have any information on him, but...
Now, you would be very interested in him. Now,
what?
You talk about this quickening a lot, right?
I do, yes.
Okay. First of all, everyone says as you grow older, time seems to speed up.
That's
I know
true.
I'm 25.
That is true, but I am very cognizant of that fact, and I am not making my observations based on that.
Right. And I'm just throwing that in as an option. However, Mr. McKenna talks about something like that. He's got something called, Time Wave Zero.
Whatever.
I think.
Look, you supply me, thank you, with information on Mr. McKenna, and I will pursue him. I'll have anybody on, in case you haven't figured that out yet. That's me. I will have anybody on. I'm just that way. Anybody who's interesting, I will have on. Period. A first-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Is this Art?
It is.
Hi, this is Dennis calling from Anchorage.
Anchorage, Alaska. Okay, you're a little hard to hear, partner, so you're going to have to get into that phone and project.
Okay. I just wanted to call and tuned in a little bit, a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Yes, sir.
And I just heard you saying something about fighting wars on U.S. soil.
Yes. Uh-huh.
There was, I just wanted to let you know, there was a war that was fought when the Japanese invaded the Aleutian Chain of Alaska back during World War II.
Okay, but the spirit of my statement, sir, was that there have not been major wars fought on our soil.
No.
The major wars have been fought elsewhere, and there's a reason for that. And it's because we're strong.
Correct.
If we were weak, then we would have been fighting in St. Louis. You know what I mean? Hello?
Yes.
Do you get my meaning?
Yes, I understand what you're saying.
So, yes, I'm sure there may have been some small invasions of the Aleutians, and then I guess we could take my statement about the drug war. But more or less, the spirit of my statement is that major wars have been fought on other people's land. It's kind of like Patton's famous statement about the whole idea is to make the other poor bastard die for his country. Not for you to go and die for yours, but to make the other poor bastard die for his. And it's a little like that. And when you're... Anyway, I've said enough about that. It's almost like a law of nature. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello? Going, gone. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. This is Bob in Minneapolis.
Hi, Bob. Speak up for us.
Yes, sir. Calling about the use of a potential use of a Stinger to knock down that TWA flight.
Yes, sir.
Clancy had called in or sent a fax to Rush Limbaugh indicating that the altitude that the aircraft was at, which was about 12 to 13,000 feet.
Well, there's a lot of dispute about that. I've heard everything from 8 to 13.
Okay, because they said that the altitude on a Stinger is somewhere in the range of about 9,400 feet. And that if it was at 12 to 13, there was no way. Plus,
well, now, hold it. Slow
yes.
up. We our network checked with the military on the day this occurred at my behest. And the military told my network, it depends on the Stinger model, but it can be from 1 to 8 miles. A mile
okay.
being 5,280
right.
feet. So you can do the math.
For sure. Okay, now I was just the thing. Did you hear the network news that they found the black boxes?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So
all
maybe,
right.
maybe we will get some answers.
Well, they said that the pinger had been knocked off of the black box. That's the reason it had been found, and it was all the way back in the tail section.
Right, but it had been pinging and then suddenly stopped. Now,
right.
how did they explain that? Because apparently after it got knocked off, it was, if it was knocked off, it was still pinging.
Absolutely amazing.
And it had new batteries, they said.
Right.
So if it was pinging, how could it suddenly stop?
There's too many. There's a lot of inconsistencies, and I really feel for those families that are having to go through this. That it's just totally.
Of course, now they've got the black boxes, so I would hope for everybody's sake that if there is information and there should be important information to glean from them, that we get it quickly.
Okay. Well, it's just the caveat that they threw on the news that the. They're hoping they can get some stuff out, is what it amounts to. So they even leaving themselves an out in the event that they're damaged or to such a point where they can't even
it's always them. Yeah, it's always possible. But, I think, thank you. I don't know a lot about black box technology. Actually, I think they're orange. But I believe they are built to withstand the very worst kind of impact on land or into a mountain or something like that. And certainly to withstand water, the ravages of water, seawater, because planes are likely to come down in the water. Two-thirds of the Earth is water, isn't it? So I would hope that information can be gleaned for the sake of everybody concerned, the families, the American people. We've got to learn what's happened here pretty soon. We really do. So if they glean information quickly, I hope they release it. I'm sure there will be a lot of pressure to do so. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, sir.
Hey, I had a comment about the other day.
Again, sir, you're weak. I can barely hear you.
Oh, okay. I had a comment about some of the terrorist acts that have been going on.
Yes.
And I listened to an interview with the new Israeli prime minister a couple weeks ago, and I felt that he stated it best, that terrorism, the problem of terrorism in the Middle East and the United States is essentially the same. That is, in order for it to be effective, it has to be supported by an outside sovereign state.
I agree.
And I think that regarding Oklahoma City, if McVeigh was the trigger man, somebody had to back him.
That may or may not be. I don't know. But I do know this. You're right about one thing. Our President Bill Clinton would do well to take some counsel from Benjamin Netanyahu.
Yeah.
Netanyahu it is, actually.
Well, if you look at the way the buildings were carved out in Durand
yes.
and in Oklahoma City.
Yes.
They're copycats.
Very similar. It's true.
I think they were the same people myself. They could be the same people that did 800.
It all could be tied together. I don't, at this point, as they say, you can't rule out anything. And I have always admired Benjamin Netanyahu. I have always really admired that man, and he has always been high on my list of people I wanted to interview. And I had an interview set up with him at one point. But now, of course, he's the Israeli prime minister, so it's going to be more difficult, but not impossible. I would really like to interview him. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, sir. Art Bell?
Yes.
I got a new theory to spit out for you.
All right, spit it out.
On the Flight 800.
All right.
With the radar anomalies,
that they said they had beforehand.
Right. Now they deny those, by the way.
They deny those?
That's the latest I've heard. What, you know, it's minute to minute.
Yeah, it's change keeps on changing. But what I was thinking, naval tests of that new A-12 stealth fighter.
Right.
Accidental misfire of a air-to-air missile. And therefore, see, if it was a Stinger, it would be a heat-seeking missile.
Mm-hmm.
And it would take out the engines, but the plane itself wouldn't have blown up like that.
Well, that depends. It would depend on many things. Once you've taken out an engine, pieces and parts are going to fly all over the place.
Uh-huh.
You've got an explosion that could ignite the fuel.
Uh-huh.
So the reports I heard say a streak of light followed by a white explosion, which would mean high explosive, followed by a ball of orange flame, which would indicate fuel.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, and then the reason the Navy is the one conducting the complete underwater search, and maybe that's why the black boxes stopped pinging for the 2 days,
yeah, that,
and all of
that,
a sudden
that,
they find them again.
Yeah, that occurred to me too, sir.
Okay.
Have a good morning.
You too, sir.
Take care. Who knows? I found that highly unusual. Pinging just stopped. And yet they found the black boxes suddenly, both of them. Boom, like that. Absolutely remarkable. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Brian in Omaha, Nebraska.
Hi, Brian.
I was calling to give you an update on that crop circle in Butte, Nebraska.
Oh, thank you. Yes, that apparently is being regarded, according to the newspaper article, as not a hoax.
No, that's no. What I have gathered from people who have gone there is that the man was out there doing his crops and stuff, taking care of them, and he came upon a 100-yard strip. Straight strip where they were broken off over, but perfectly broken off. And then at the end of the strip was the circle where the craft had evidently landed.
Well, I know Levengood, Dr. Levengood has looked at it, and others, and everybody that is looked has said this is not a hoax.
No, the police have definitely searched the whole field, and they found no trace of intrusion or that anybody had gone out there and done this, so...
So what do you think? UFOs in Nebraska, huh?
No, I hope not. Could be anywhere, though, right?
It certainly could be.
You know, I'm not sure. I'd love to go up and take a look at it myself, though.
As a matter of fact, so would I. Now, you're there. I mean, you could. How far away is that from you?
We figured it out last night, and it's about a two-hour drive from Omaha to get up there.
Are you tempted to make the drive?
Tempted, but they had the guy on a radio station the other night, or yesterday morning, and he said that he couldn't wait anymore, that he had to harvest those crops.
Oh.
So I hope he's not going to destroy that, you know?
Well, I suppose, you know, the man's got a business, and he's got to do something, so I understand that. That's too bad.
Yeah, it really is. I'm hoping that maybe there's somebody out there that has a plane that had been able to take some type of an aerial view of it.
That would be good. Have you seen the crop circles on our webpage yet?
Yes, I have.
What do you think?
I don't know. It's, you know... it could be anything. You know,
well,
like you said last night, there's nobody out there. Even if they did know the truth, they probably wouldn't come out and say in the first place.
That's right.
I don't really know.
That's right. Well, listen, you guys, keep your eyes on the Nebraska skies.
Okay, I'll stay in touch, Art.
All right, take care. I don't know what to say about that. They're saying it's not a hoax. You take from that what you want. You want to see two of the most amazing, mind-boggling, heart-stopping photographs you've ever seen in your whole life, you go up to my webpage. It's www.artbell.com. Once again, www.artbell, A-R-T-B-E-L-L, no space in there, thank you, .com. And I believe it's in the Linda Howe section. That's where we place them. And one is of the Stonehenge crop circle. It's incredible. Incredible. I mean, it's clear. And it's unmistakable, and it's unretouched. And the other is of the so-called double helix. And both of them will cause you to sit and think. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Oh, hi, Art. Yeah, with this crash, I think, since it's in Atlanta and then Ted Turner is big in Atlanta and probably has a lot of money in it.
Sir, the crash was not in Atlanta.
No. I mean, the Olympics are in Atlanta. Yeah,
yes.
So mm-hmm. Ted Turner stands to lose a lot of money with his CNN, and then probably Ted Turner's, filtering the news to the benefit of all his investments in the Olympics.
Yeah, but what about NBC and ABC and CBS?
There's also probably ex-President Carter and Andrew Young have tremendous pull, too, yeah?
So you think they're keeping
it
all?
And they have their money in the Atlanta Olympics, so, yeah.
I don't know.
You don't know?
It's pretty far-fetched.
Oh, okay.
I mean, anything is possible, but pretty far-fetched. You're certainly correct about one thing, and that is that news of terrorism, confirmed terrorism, would have a very, very chilling effect on the Olympics. But would they keep it secret because of that? God, I wouldn't want to think so. I wouldn't want to believe that, would you? As I get older, I'm getting more cynical about it all the time. Too many times I've been wrong about that. First-time caller line, you are on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art Bell.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I just had a comment about the fish in the throat story you read.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Boy, that's about a bizarre case of murder-suicide, ain't it?
Well, it's not real. I don't know if a fish can be accused of murder, nor if the man could be accused of suicide for taking a big yawn and getting a fish down his throat.
Yeah. Hey, I got one more thing. By golly, this thing only rang about 3 times, and you answered it, so...
That's why we have the first-time caller line.
It's great. Yeah, all you other people out there, eat your heart out. So enjoying the show, Mr. Bell. You have a good morning.
Thank you. Where are you?
I'm somewhere in southern Oregon.
Okay.
Just going down the road.
Well, take care out there, and watch out for cats.
Well, thank you, sir. I will.
All right. See you later. I don't think 18-wheelers stop for cats easily. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Well, good morning, Art.
Good morning, sir.
This is Mr. White here in Phoenix, Arizona.
All right.
How you doing?
Fine. KFYI country.
You got it. I'm calling in regards to the lady who called you last night, and she was talking about how you shouldn't defend yourself or whatever and called you a hate monger or whatever.
I know.
Okay, well.
Might have been Steve Benson's daughter.
Pardon me?
Nothing. Go ahead.
Anyway, I came up with this one conclusion. I want your reaction on this, so I hope you're prepared. It is this. In the rational scheme of perception, ignorance is knowledge.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I guess that is true in certain cases.
Well, I would say that her perception is not quite rational.
Look, she is attached to a dying philosophy.
Yes.
At least I hope it's dying.
For our sake. Well, you have a good morning, Art.
All right, you too.
Talk to you later.
Take care. That's Phoenix, Arizona. Phoenix. First-time caller line, you're on the air.
Good morning, Art. Kevin with Bakersfield, California.
All right, K-E-R-N in Bakersfield.
Yes, loving you over here on Kern.
Yes, sir.
2 things, sir. Visited your website this weekend and very impressed.
Oh, it's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, and you do have a gorgeous wife.
Oh, thank you.
Second thing, on the TWA crash.
Tell you what, I've got a break coming up. Are you in a position where you can afford to hold for our break?
For you, Art, I'll hold.
For me, you'll hold? All right, holding you are then. Because I've got to get this in. Here's Maria.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Shadows painting our faces, traces
of romance in our heads. Or I may simply be a single drop of rain, but I will remain. And I'll be back again and again and again and again and again and again. You know, every every now and then there's a song that just expresses your attitude about life, and that's the one. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art Bell?
Yes, sir.
Yes, this is the D-Man from Pass Rules, California.
Welcome to the show. Good to have you. Turn your radio off.
I'm sorry. The reason I called is I've called once before, and I must have had a bad connection or something, but you know where Paso is?
Do I know where Paso Robles is?
Yes.
Yes, of course. Central California. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
All right. I guess you don't get too many phone calls here. I've been listening to you guys for probably about a year and a half, and really enjoy your show.
Thank you. Well, it's a matter of odds. You know, we're on approaching 280 radio stations across the country. So you're talking about millions of people, and it's a matter of odds.
It's incredible how much you the people you pick up from all over the world. It's You must have some incredible push there on that radio you got there.
Little oomph, yes.
But one of the reasons I called, due to the crop circles.
Yes, sir.
The thing I wanted to point out is, you know, with all this weather changing and stuff right now, the weather changing and everything, that it wouldn't be out of the question for
weird atmospheric conditions?
Yeah, like they can't find anything man-made. Well, let's say that like a tornado, they do drop and they do touch. And it's not uncommon for more than one.
Well, okay, let's take the Stonehenge crop circle for an example, okay? This occurred in a 15-minute period during daylight.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It is comprised of 151 circles.
Mm.
Now, that would be some tornado.
Yes, or several of them in one area because of the atmosphere. There could be up in the atmosphere a large wind tunnel, and they're just dropping.
Oh, look, your explanation is as good as anybody, sir.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of it as a natural way of it happening. Now, I'm not saying that little guys from outer space there is not out of the question, too.
Yeah, I'm with you. It could be any of the above. One thing, only thing I'm sure of, it's not Doug and Dave.
Yeah.
I guarantee you that.
All right. Well, you have a nice evening. It was a pleasure talking to you, Mr.
And to you as well. What radio station do you listen to?
I listen to, KPRL. 12:30.
All right. I just wanted to give him some credit.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have a nice day.
Take care. If you can, tell us what station you're on. That helps. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Wrong line.
Yes, sir.
Wrong line, sorry.
Wrong line?
Yes, sir.
All right. Wild card line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good evening, Art. How are you?
I am fine. It's morning where I am. Where are you?
Well, let's just say when I went to bed, it was evening, all right.
I see.
Hi. This is Bob in Pocatello.
Yo, Bob.
Yes. As you're talking about, you know, light and the effect of it, you know, the photon theory of light is there, you know, but it's always been a question about that, whether or not there's a conflict to the electromagnetic theory and photon theory. But, you know, we'll call it Bob's effect, but. But if you take a microbalance and out of the electronic microbalance and out to the fifth place on empty pan, light will attract a pan, either up or down. And
wish I knew you were talking about there.
Well,
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, anyway, maybe some of your listeners could.
Maybe they could.
Could get into that. But you know, on this white explosion, you know, had a heat seeker like the SA-7, the Grail.
Right.
There's a lot of them around in the world. The terrorists have been.
You better believe it.
Getting them around. But anyway, a white explosion, if you had an engine instantly disintegrate, what it would do, it'd tear those fuel bladders all to heck, Art.
That's right.
You'd get a white explosion. I was thinking 3D here now. You'd get a white explosion when the fuel bladders went, and then you would get
oh, I can...
a ignited, you'd get a ball of fire.
Yeah, that's
now,
right.
3D-wise,
no, I can easily visualize that.
Okay, 3D-wise, okay, because the plane is traveling at a maximum stress on its members because those engines are going full bore as it's gaining altitude.
That's right. She's climbing up.
That's right. But anyway, the fuel explosion is just a little bit behind the aircraft, but the aircraft is also getting sprayed with engine vanes, and of course under maximum stress, then your thing starts to break up, and of course the slipstream would continue to tear it to pieces real quick.
Yes.
But anyway, you would not get a ball of fire burning the aircraft because the ball of fire is just slightly behind it. But anyway, we thought we'd throw that in.
All right. Well, I appreciate your tossing that in. Thank you. Yeah. Look, I think it was not a natural event. As in accident. I don't believe that for a second. I think it was either a bomb or a missile. One of the two. I just hope we get word on these black boxes quickly. And you know that they're examining those quickly and carefully. And maybe even sometime today they're going to have something to say. I hope so. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Bell.
Yes.
Calling back from yesterday about the Nietzsche idea,
might is right.
Oh, you don't want to hear that again?
No, I don't want to go through it again. I mean, if we can take...
I'm not going to accuse you of anything.
As long as you're not putting words in my mouth, we can have a talk.
Okay. Civilization is what survives, not might.
Civilization is what survives, not
right.
might.
Mm-hmm.
Well... Okay.
Yeah, you know, peace.
Peace. Are we civilized?
I think we're showing signs of getting more and more barbaric. The way I see it,
are we now?
With the rich getting richer and greedier, and more people getting poorer and poorer, I see that as more barbaric.
You do.
It's modern barbarism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's out of balance.
Well... It is true that the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer,
mm-hmm.
but still, as a general circumstance, if you make a comparison, standard of living, what other standard you want to use, America is far, far ahead of most of the rest of the world. Yes.
Yes, but the people in America, the way it breaks down with wealth belonging to the few and what's left belonging to the greater mass, it's really out of balance.
It's out of balance a little bit, but, all free societies are always going to be out of balance.
I don't know that this is a rather free society.
The only way you achieve real balance is true communism.
I just think that, of course, my problem is what's happening to the poor in this country. It hasn't happened yet, but what seems like it's going to be happening in 2 years, and what
do you believe in communism?
No, I believe in a democracy.
You
do? I believe in a democracy.
Well, then, actually, it's a republic, a representative democracy.
Uh-huh.
Is what we've got.
And more and more, you know, more equal rights for more people, something to work on, constantly make it better, evolve it.
Isn't that what we're doing?
No, and that's why I don't understand the right wing, because they just want to keep on tipping that balance into the favor of the rich more and more and more. They don't care. It's like so predatory. They don't care.
Predatory to me, predatory is taking from... Predatory to me is taking from those who have earned, toiled, made money, and giving it to those who are sitting on their butts. That's predatory.
No, that's not true. It's, you know, if you understand the economic conditions, you understand that people are unemployed and with low wages because the people that are controlling the money and the power in the country are taking too much. They're keeping too much aside for themselves.
And so what the only way to achieve what you want is communism.
Yes,
that equal distribution.
Don't go to the other extreme, though.
That is where you are. You're just not saying it, but that's where you are.
I mean, strong unions, better
unions.
Wages, more.
Nobody's
sharing,
no. Hey, look. Hey, you can have a union.
profit sharing. Jobs not degraded.
You can bargain for profit sharing if you want.
Yes, I think people
with
have to
union.
Fight for it.
Go out there and become a union organizer then.
But I think that, you know, you guys are, the right wing is being, and the Republicans are much too successful. Because it's like a snowball, and when I see that the wealth is so unequally distributed, there's a
there's no distribution of wealth. We don't have. So you keep using these communist terms. We don't have. We don't have a distribution. We don't have a distribution of wealth in America. We have people who earn money.
Oh, we do have a mass of wealth in the power of the few, like the top 10% control 90% of the wealth. Now, what does that mean?
It means they're very successful.
Excuse me, I'm sorry?
Was it distributed to them, or did they earn it?
Oh, they've acquired it.
Through what means?
Oh, you know, keeping the cost of wages down, that's one big, strong means.
Have you ever heard the expression, have you ever heard the expression, take this job and shove it?
Not just that. You can't. If you're in a position of having nothing to put on your table, you can't just shove the job.
I've done it more times than I can count.
But you can't use yourself as an example. You have to look at the system.
Why can't I use myself as an example?
No, you can't just take a incidental case and apply that to the whole country. You have to look at the statistics.
Have you got a job?
Have I got a job?
Yep.
Yes.
Could you tell them to shove it tomorrow?
No way.
No,
people don't have that flexibility.
Now, you mean to say you're a slave?
It's the same thing.
Are you a slave?
Modern slavery.
A modern slavery.
It
is. Slavery is when they used to have chains around your feet.
But I can't believe that you're not looking at this whole picture like this. You're just looking at yourself and saying that if I could do it, then anybody can do it.
Say you could do it.
I'm sorry?
I was trying to say you could do it. I shifted the argument from me to you.
But
you could do it.
If we get to talk about our personal lives, I don't think we're going to see the whole picture of what's going on in the country.
You're right about that. I mean, I don't want to get stuck talking about just you or just me. So hold on a minute now. Hello there. Are you on? You're on the air. Are you there?
Oh, yeah.
Good. What is your name?
I'm Annie in New Orleans.
Annie in New Orleans. Annie, do you have a job?
I'm kind of self-employed, so I'm very...
Oh, self-employed. That's even better, Annie.
Well, not really.
Not really?
No, I get $6 an hour just whenever it comes in.
How do you get that as a self-employed
cleaning
person?
Houses.
Oh, I see. All right. But you could still go get another job if you wanted to, right?
If it's available.
Uh-huh.
But I live a very meager life.
But what you have, Annie, is opportunity, right?
I wouldn't call it opportunity, though.
What would you call it?
Chance, being at the right place at the right time.
All right. Well, meet somebody who is your soul sister. By the way, where are you calling from?
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Yeah.
No. My other caller.
Oh, St. Charles.
St. Charles.
Missouri.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you both feel about the same way about this.
Actually, that's why I called, because I was under the impression that she was trying to say that the theory of... not evolution, but how does that go again? Survival of the fittest was had nothing really to do with military. That's what I thought she was trying to say, and that you had turned it around to make it seem that it was a military theory. I might be mistaken.
No, that's pretty good. It's a false idea that might makes right. I mean, look what happened to Germany. I mean, Hitler had that idea.
Yeah. Because in my interpretation, that sanitation is what is one of the things that keeps a society more than just a society, but sanitation is crucial, and that's even, I guess, in the Bible in a way, because you could have as big a military as you want, and then when there's a viral outbreak, goodbye.
Okay. Yeah. I think that the Republicans are going headlong into worsening the situation and worsening it. And I'm so worried that what it's not now, but in a short time. When, for instance, these cutbacks on the poor, in 2 years, these people are going to be in the streets.
Now, wait a minute. The President of the United States is a Democrat.
Right.
It doesn't really matter who's which party.
Thank you. That's exactly right.
Yeah, but I'm looking at who's pushing it through. The Congress, Newt Gingrich,
Bob Dole. But nothing has gone through. The President hasn't wanted to go through. He's got the power of veto.
I don't know where this president's at. I don't know what he's doing next. I hope he's doing the right thing.
So
it's a tough thing to do.
He's not really even liberal enough for you, is he?
I don't know where he's at. He's got such a tough job. If I had to make the decision, he's got to call these things. It's really hard. I feel there is this imbalance of wealth distribution in this country. If you don't agree that, if you think it's different, I think
your terminology is probably what's getting Art off base.
Well, no, Art only got upset.
It's not so much distribution, but it's just, you know, all these politicians. And when she says rich, I don't think she just means like somebody who's got a lot of money, but we're talking about the corporate world here, the huge corporations, and they just amass these huge fortunes at the expense of every person on the planet.
All right, listen, ladies, I've got to end it there. I'm sorry. Thank you both. I wish we had more time, but the clock is pressing. Time is gone. I'm sorry. The clock says I got to go. So, from the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Good night, America.